recess yesterday, we do not have to call roll, but we do have to recognize those that are not with us this morning, and I believe Mr. Representative Marvin Nelson is not available to be here this morning. I do not see Representative Kading. Oh, there you are. You're hiding. And I know that Porter will not be able to be with us today as well. I would like to welcome the governor with us this morning. Governor, it's nice to see you 2 days in a row here. So.
Wouldn't miss it.
Okay, with that, meeting of the Water Topics Overview Committee, have to call the order. Now the consideration of the minutes from the August 12th. Is there any comments or questions? Move for approval by Senator Robinson. Do I hear a second? Second by Representative Hofstede. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign, motion carried. Let us get right into our 905 presentation. Terry's going to talk to us about being a nuisance. I have to preface this presentation, Terry, if I may. I was up meeting with the commissioner and the staff, and they showed me this piece of pipe, plastic water pipe, and in the pipe was stuffed these zebra mussels. And it was in a water line pipe that he showed me. And I thought, this has a huge bearing on the Red River Valley and water intake structures, irrigation structures, and et cetera. So because of that relationship with what this committee is about, I asked the commissioner to come and speak to us. What is the current status? Because I think if we have to address this in the future, we need to plan for it now, because it's probably going to be very expensive. So with that, Mr. Commissioner, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Terry Steinwand. I'm director of the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And given some of the comments I had before the committee meeting started, I will keep my comments to aquatic nuisance species and not deer or deer season, please. Or lack thereof licenses. Everybody should have a handout, and I'm going to follow that, but I'm certainly not going to read it verbatim. I think it's offensive when somebody reads what they have on the paper. You folks are very well read and can read it yourself, but I will follow it. And if you look at the slideshow, and I'm not going to show the pipe that the chairman referred to, but this isn't something, aquatic nuisance species is not something that we just started looking at. We've actually been looking at it at the Game and Fish Department since 1991, and at that time we didn't call it an aquatic nuisance species program. It was more for illegal introductions of fish, like carp, white suckers, bullheads, those kind of things. And at that point in time, the biggest threat to our fisheries in North Dakota was the presence of carp in those areas. And even though I'm jumping a little bit ahead here, we felt so passionate about keeping carp out of the Devil's Lake, which is a tremendous sport fishery, that 10 years ago, we worked with area farmers in what was called the Loma Berm, over just east of the town, little town of Loma. And we put a berm across a small divide where water, when water was high enough, it actually flowed both ways. But carp were coming out of Canada, moving down that into it, and we actually eradicated some smaller areas and went on a national wildlife refuge to keep carp out of Devil's Lake, and I'm happy to say that has been tremendously successful. Excuse me. Like I said, we've been working on this for quite a while, and we've worked with called the 100th Meridian Task Force, which really was focused on zebra mussels. That started in the mid-90s. We have received some funding, albeit small, from federal sources to deal with the aquatic nuisance species. Primarily, it's been internal funds, meaning stuff that we have, or funding that we have prioritized internally to fund the efforts. And for the most part, it's been education and information activities. If you've driven down I-94, other places in the state, you'll see signs out there saying, clean your boat off, drain your live well, those kind of things. All of these are meant to prevent aquatic nuisance species either entry into the state or spread throughout the state. And in the early part, we actually provided signs of boat ramps at parks and rec areas across the state. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, primarily on Secaucus, Weah, Jamestown Reservoir, and Bowman Haley, and the North Dakota Tourism Department agreed that if they were contacted for information on recreational opportunities in North Dakota, they would give that information out. And we think that has been really successful. In the early 2000s, we really began more formal ANS monitoring, primarily for aquatic vegetation and zebra mussel. And in 2005, the legislature passed a law that allowed us to work the plan, the Aquatic Nuisance Species Management Plan, that then Governor Hogan signed and approved and re-implemented. And it allowed us to form an Aquatic Invasive Species Committee composed of Game and Fish, Ag Department, Health Department, interested anglers, tourism, tribes, so on and so forth, trying to develop programs that would prevent movement of aquatic nuisance species into North Dakota. As part of this, we do have it on our website. It's gf.nd.gov/ANS. All you probably want to know and more about aquatic nuisance species. And we created a list, a lot of them that may seem nonsensical to you, like the snakehead, you've heard of that out of Washington, D.C. That's prohibited from being brought into North Dakota under these administrative rules, and certainly a lot more. This plan really started more, and these are the kind of signs you can expect to see at area lakes across the state. Boating access sites, more appropriately. Now, public outreach, posters, pamphlets, radio ads, billboards, websites, sporting goods stores, so on and so forth. We actually started inspection of out-of-state bait supplies. They have to have a wholesale bait vendor's license to sell bait in North Dakota. It's a non-resident bait vendor's license, wholesaler's license. We actually go into Minnesota, inspect their supplies, where they get their bait, before we approve them to bring bait into North Dakota, because the biggest threat for stuff like zebra mussel, Eurasian water milfoil, is from the east, and it continues to be from the east. We worked with other agencies to mandate inspections. We can't mandate if a barge comes in to build a bridge on the Missouri River, or the Corps of Engineers, or the Health Department, or the Water Commission, but we recommend that that become part of the protocol before these barges come in. And they've been excellent in working with us. We have been inspecting those vehicles, or those barges and those waterborne vehicles, before coming into North Dakota, or before putting in the water. The only instance I'm aware of was on the Red River, where a Corps of Engineers barge had come in. There was old, dead, desiccated zebra mussels, but it had been in a place that was infested with zebra mussel. But had it been live, we would have caught it. So that, again, has worked for us, we believe. Again, monitoring, and I want to point out 2015, I asked my staff, and I've been asked by others, that how come 2015 is lower? Well, it's not necessarily. We don't have all the information put into this database yet. But if you look at the number of water sampled for ANS by year, in 2015, it's probably come out a little lower. But that's just the number of waters. We have really focused our efforts on the eastern quarter of the state primarily. There are 11 sites in Devil's Lake alone. Some lakes where we know there are high non-resident boating traffic. Glad to say that we found nothing in any of those except at the confluence where the Otter Tail meets the Red River south of Wahpeton. If you look at 2009, 10, and 11, we first had the report of the biggest threat for zebra mussel coming into North Dakota from Minnesota and Pelican Lake, which lies on the Otter Tail, which ultimately empties into the Red River. And the infestation you've heard about in the last few months is, we're convinced, came from that source. We had seen bellagers, which is a small larval form of zebra mussel. They float passively, they go with the flow, they can't swim against the flow, meaning they can't swim up the Cheyenne River, the Goose River, or any of those. But we had documented one villager, I think it was in 2011, none in 2012 or 13, two in 2014, 2015 an explosion. These are very, very prolific animals. they can put out tens of thousands of eggs, starting at about 55-degree water temperature up to somewhere in the lower 80s. The peak is going to be in the mid-60s sometime, so you're looking at probably latter part of June, July, August, and first part of September in North Dakota, where those sort of infestations are going to be the worst. And again, we're trying to take a proactive approach, reasonable, feasible, responsible, and as non-intrusive to the public as we can. Has to be laws, there have to be some administrative rules, collaboration, coordination, information, education. We try to do all of those, and again, in the most reasonable manner. And we do have check stations by enforcement, some in the spring late spring, early summer, when we see the traffic heating up, and once in the fall, when we know the non-resident duck hunters are coming from the east. And you've probably seen a news article lately about the constitutionality and legality of road check stations. Until the courts tell us that we're doing it wrong or we shouldn't be doing it, we're going to continue to do these. We have also developed an internal inspection and prevention protocol. We don't have a set of nets for every particular lake. We go from lake to lake to lake, checking out the fish populations. In 2010 or 11, we developed a protocol on how do we disinfect those nets to make sure we're not part of the problem, we're not moving these ANS species from lake to lake. At the current time, there are only four documented aquatic nuisance species in North Dakota, and two of them are aquatic plant species, and again, these are on our websites. Curly leaf pondweed is one, primarily in the Missouri River system, and the jury is out as to what is the impact to the recreational fishery on this. If there is one, we haven't seen it yet. It can be for boating. Anybody from the Bismarck-Mandan area here knows that Marina Bay, Southport can get just choked with this weed, and it can cause some recreational problems, but in terms of fishing, we haven't been able to document anything. Eurasian water milfoil, only a couple places that we're aware of. It was first found just below Bald Hill Dam in the Cheyenne River by Valley City, and we became concerned at that point, and with our angler questionnaires, we were able to kind of highlight where the highest risk areas were, and one that we had identified was Dead Cold Creek down at Lisbon, and 2 years later we had Eurasian water milfoil. That is a success story, though. We worked with the local water board, we lowered water levels and tried to freeze it out. We actually used some chemical control. Didn't seem to have a whole lot of effect just coming back, and all of a sudden it's no longer there. So to us, that's a success story. Silver carp, you've probably heard this, and this is a jumping carp you've seen on the initial slide, and you've probably seen some YouTube videos on this one. It's a European carp species, and they are tremendous filter feeders. The only place that we have found these are in the James River, up to right below Jamestown Dam, and we never had documented these until after the flood of 2011. We knew they were in South Dakota, and we believe the flood of 2011 pulled them up. They have not gone beyond it, but this is one of those where actually through proclamation, we made it illegal for anyone, whether it's private angler or a bait vendor out there, to collect any kind of bait from the James River, because when these things are really small, they look like they could be pretty good bait, but if you, Representative Nelson, please don't look at me like that, I should have never said that. I'm going to look over here. if they would get into other water bodies, they probably would do a lot of harm to our recreational fisheries. And of course, zebra mussel in 2015, we didn't document any adult species or any adults in North Dakota waters. And the same would be true of Manitoba. This spring, for whatever reason, they just went boom. And again, these are actual zebra mussels from the Red River, right here. You can see this doesn't happen in one summer. We think these are probably 1 year old. And we found them, we certainly found it at Fargo, Sorley Bridge up in Grand Forks. It's all the way into Canada, there's no doubt about it. Are they huge? Are they a massive infestation yet? No, but I think it's just a matter of time. we had in the past actually requested municipalities along the Red River that when you pull your docks, that if you have a fishing dock, or if you have hard structures for your water intake, when you pull them out for maintenance or whatever, would you please check and report to us? They hadn't reported to us. We assumed that they hadn't found any. And actually, I think it was on Fargo water intake, one was found, but we have, again, with increased monitoring, we have since found more now. And again, sampling is one of the biggest ways we can find out where they are and how hard they are. Okay, eight sites sampled, two in Manitoba and six in North Dakota. Villagers, or again, the larval forms are found at every one of them, and really confirms to us that they're there and probably there to stay. We did sample other water bodies, as you can see by this, and I can let the committee know where they are, but every one of the 23 of the 24 sites that we sampled intensively did not have zebra mussel villagers when we sampled this year. The only one that did, again, was where the otter tail enters the Red River just south of Wahpeton, and that was expected. And actually, the finding of this and the reason I am here is resulted in an emergency administrative rule. You're all aware that there is an administrative rule process to go through, but can it take 180 days plus to sometimes get that through? And in consultation with the governor's office, it was decided we probably should go the emergency administrative rule to immediately address that threat of zebra mussels in the Red River. And we had administrative rules out there that you can't have any water. You have to empty your live well before you leave a water body, and that was an ANS regulation. We went one step further saying you can't even take your bait away from the Red River in any water under this emergency administrative rule. You have to pull your plug out of your boat. You have to drain it out, meaning no water out of the Red River area at all. And in fact, we went so far, we imposed the harshest penalty we could under administrative rules. It's if you are transporting water away from the Red River, it's a Class B misdemeanor. So. What we have done, and actually we were really focused on the Red River, and we will be talking to the Administrative Rules Committee about this in early December, but we're anticipating that administrative rule is going to be accepted. We've had comments when we took comments on this emergency administrative rule, why don't you have the drain plug out for statewide? It actually would be easier for enforcement to say, okay, you don't have your drain plug out, you got to pull it out. You can't have it in there. As soon as that emergency administrative rule is accepted, we're going to start the next process and have it for a statewide. If the Administrative Rules Committee wants to give it to us right now so we don't go through that process, that would be even better. So the question is, what more can be done? We've heard an awful lot. Some of these we can do, some of these we can partially do, and these aren't necessarily in the order that you're going to see in the handout that you got, but we've heard, well, conduct mandatory watercraft inspections. We're not sure that would eliminate the risk. In fact, I'm positive it wouldn't eliminate the risk. What we're trying to do is reduce the risk possible. If we're 99% effective now, which I'm not saying we are, I don't know what that percent is, how much would we increase it by mandatory watercraft inspection, and how much would that cost? When you consider we have 440 boat ramps in the state, when you consider we have, I don't remember the number of, I think it's up there, 24 primary roads coming from Minnesota, 23 out of South Dakota, 9 out of Montana, connecting roads to North Dakota, not counting gravel roads or section lines. I'm not saying it would be impossible, but it would be the next thing to impossible to have every one of those covered. Mandatory, give an example. Montana had, they don't have a mandatory, but they have road charge checks. They had 20 roving and permanent stations in 2014 at a cost of $1 million. Minnesota, it really depends on the lake, and it's up to lake associations whether or not they want to have mandatory inspections, but some do, some don't. There were, I believe it was 18 new zebra mussel infestations in Minnesota this year, and I believe they're spending about $10 million a year on zebra mussel in Minnesota. Again, requiring drugs, drain plug removal, I've already talked about that. roadside check stations, we will be looking at potentially increasing that at certain times of the year. In fact, we're looking internally right now is, can we provide the funding at some of those higher-risk areas, or we'd be Devil's Lake, some areas down by Ashley Wishick, where we've had some comments that there's a lot of non-resident traffic down there. If we can find the internal salary dollars, we're going to hire temporaries to help our enforcement with the check stations, plus kind of the roaming check area is what it amounts to. And that would give us, actually would give us more information to go on coming into the next legislative session, if we would do that. Implement stricter policies for fishing tournaments. We did have fairly strict policies, meaning you had to have your boat inspected before you fished the tournament. We kind of got away from that because the larger national tournaments coming into North Dakota, those were pretty easy because they had a set amount of time they could pre-fish a tournament. You have some of these local or larger state tournaments, they can pre-fish anytime, so we wouldn't catch them anyway. But we're going to talk about it to the next Aquatic Invasive Species Committee. Drain plugs, bait water. I guess enforcement is probably one of the keys, but it's not the only one. It's any law is only as good as it's complied with. And I guess the bottom line, there's no guarantee that zebra mussel or any other aquatic nuisance species won't spread to other areas of the state. Again, what we're trying to do is reduce the risk to the extent possible. We don't believe we can absolutely eliminate that risk. So, Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions.
Any questions or comments from the committee? Senator Sittner.
Chairman, Mr. Starwand, have you assessed any severe penalties because of aquatic nuisance findings, or haven't you found any?
I'm sorry, Senator Sittner, would you repeat that? I was trying to look.
Have you assessed any severe penalties, or haven't you found any violators?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sittner, severe penalties to the extent we could. Up to this point, they've only been non-criminal offenses.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find the
financial.
Yes, limited financial. My enforcement tells me, again, it's a risk issue. If it's a $25 fine, you may say, I don't want to clean those weeds off my boat, or I'd like to keep them walleyes alive in my live well. It's worth $25 if I get caught. If it's $2,500, you may say, that's not worth the risk. We actually do have, and I thought I brought it with me, and I'm guessing I didn't. Well, yes, I do, right here. This is a list of violations on aquatic nuisance species, whether it be live well or aquatic vegetation on your boat trailer, whatever. These are the violations for the last 3 years in North Dakota.
And how many are there in there, approximately? 20?
Oh, gosh, no. Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinner, I'm just looking through this, and I'm going to guess it's probably close to 100. It's going to be primarily vegetational.
So... with all of these problems with aquatic nuisance species, and how long before the rest of the system has, let's just say Devil's Lake, we find it in Devil's Lake. My sources, and I'm a member on the board of the International Water Institute, and those guys tell me it's only a matter of time.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sinner, I would agree with that. When we learned the infestation in Pelican Lake, and we were uneasy even before that, our guess was it's just a matter of time. We just can't predict when, and we can't predict what the impacts. We know what the impact's going to be to municipalities. We know water intake structures are going to become clogged, like the chairman said. What the cost is that going to be, I don't know. I'm drawing from a very poor memory here, but I believe I heard Chicago spends in excess of $1 billion a year cleaning out their structures just for that. And I think there are 5 municipal water intakes along the Red River. We have met with the health department. We are coordinating with them very closely to give these municipalities an idea of what kind of chemicals can they use, what should they do to prevent that type of fouling. NDSU has contacted us, and I can't remember what department it is. They want to do some research on some polymer type coating, anti-fouling type coating, and they've actually asked us in the past to allow them to bring zebra mussels into their research facility, and we've said no, we don't want any zebra mussels in North Dakota. now we're going to say, go ahead, but we want to see your containment system.
Mr. Chairman Powell, so my next question is what kind of research is out there to deal with these issues that you're aware of?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sooner, just for point of clarification, you mean research for anti-fouling?
Well, is there any research going on today that will, say, for example, help you eradicate zebra mussels and some of these other problems?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sooner, yeah, there is research going out. In fact, it was a small basin in small bay in South Lake Winnipeg that they tried, and I believe they spent $500,000 to put potash down on there that they believed would suffocate the zebra mussel and eradicate them. Well, it sounds like you did about a 95% good job. Unfortunately, the 5% comes back up to 100%. If you can't totally eradicate, meaning eliminate, those type of projects don't do any good.
One last question. So the severe problems that come from aquatic nuisance are mostly dealing with water intake systems. Is there really any damage to sport fisheries or any of those things?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sooner, that's an excellent question, and we're struggling with that. Other states are struggling with that. We're actually trying to figure out, gather from other states with known high infestation zebra mussel, of how has it affected their fishery. And they're running so hard trying to prevent, they don't have a lot of that information. But I'll use Lake Erie as a good example. There was talk saying this fishery is going to collapse. It hasn't collapsed. Have there been impacts? I'm sure there have. All we're doing is speculating right now with the massive filtering potential that a thumbnail-sized clam can do. With filter a liter of water a day. With that, they're filtering the food source, the algae out. I'll use Devil's Lake as an example because that's one we've looked at the most right now. Is the primary food source up there is the scud, the gannerus. They feed on detritus, basically the dead algae, dead stuff that has settled to the bottom of the lake. That's what they feed on. But it may come to the impact is they also filter out the really, really small critters called cladocerans that are absolutely essential for young fish to feed on and survive. That could be the impact. It could just disrupt that continuity of a year class coming through a continual year classes. So the jury is still out on that. I don't think you'll find anything in the literature that says here is absolutely the impact to a recreational fishery from zebra mussel.
Okay. Senator Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steinhorn, is there any natural predator for the zebra mussel?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lewick, yes, but not to here in North America. Again, this is from the Caspian Sea. I remember back in the early 90s when I was chief of fisheries, we were looking at stuff that just in case zebra mussel went in. Black carp are actually a natural predator of zebra mussel. It's close relative to the silver carp. They have actually imported them into some catfish ponds in the southeast part of the United States. They no longer do it because there's fear that they could cause more harm than zebra mussel should they get out. And there is some diving duck species, and I can't remember the European species that are actually, they crack these things open and eat them also, but they don't exist in North America.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. And if things change in the near future from what they are today, please let us know and we'll bring you back to discuss what that status may be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will certainly do that. What I will do when we have all of our data entered from this year into this, I'll send it up to Tim or Chris or somebody that they can provide to the committee.
That'd be good, because I think we still need to be knowledgeable of what's going on so we can be prepared.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Nelson, for not asking about deer.
Yeah. Okay, with that, we'll move on to our 920 presentation, League of Cities and Rural Water Systems on the prioritization process. Mr. Crosby, the podium is yours.
Thank you. I have some handouts.
Chairman Schmidt, ladies and gentlemen of the Water Topics Committee. For the record, I am Blake Crosby with the North Cove League of Cities. You should have three different documents in front of you. One of them is my testimony. One of them is a colored sheet that looks like this. And the other one is a little Excel spreadsheet. I didn't count as I passed things around, so if there are extras, I think Senator Unruh is still missing something. I had. Is it still coming back this way? Because there was plenty of extras. I had 25 copies run off, so. Again, good morning, and thank you for this opportunity to talk about the determination process that the city used on their projects. However, let me begin by publicly apologizing to Mr. Sando. The conversation that I generated yesterday certainly could have been done in a much more appropriate manner, and that was not my intent to intentionally or unintentionally throw Mr. Sando under the bus. Under the proverbial bus. So Todd, I apologize for yesterday. For the sake of time, I'm going to skip around in my written testimony. Please bear with me. Let me begin by explaining why it seems that rural water and municipal water seem to appear together. As Eric Volk from the Rural Water System mentioned yesterday, 60-some percent of my cities are serviced by rural water. So we are very concerned about what happens with the rural water system in North Dakota. One of the things that the rural water system has been doing for some years is they've been gathering the systems together and looking at putting together a list of projects, determining a list of projects from those that are anticipated, and then presenting that list to the State Water Commission for funding appropriations. Not necessarily a priority list, but a funding list. Based on comments from all of you, from legislators, the cities were strongly encouraged to do likewise. So I had a first meeting of the cities at the end of June, and we had a discussion about projects that the cities had on the board. Now, that the cities that were invited were the cities that had applied, that had expressed some need for water infrastructure, not flood, but water infrastructure projects in the spring of 2014. So that is the list that I used to invite the attendees. We came together, there was folks there from State Engineer's office, everybody got a chance to explain their projects and discuss them to some extent. The State Engineer's office got the opportunity to take copious notes and talk about their understanding of some of the language in Senate Bill 2020 and the process going forward. The process going forward was they were going to seek some clarification at the August meeting of the Water Topics Committee. So I did not call the cities back together to put together a more succinct determination list because there was some clarification that was needed. Now, at that August Water Topics Committee meeting, it became very clear that once you saw the list from the rural water systems, there was a concern, where's the city's list? And that was an appropriate comment. So immediately after that, I got those remaining cities together again, and Chairman Schmidt joined us. He explained to us the purpose funding, and we put together a list of projects. Now, this was big cities, medium cities, small cities. One of the things that we did not do was we did not prioritize the projects. If there's a common thread that runs between cities, it is water. The bigger cities realized that the smaller cities needed some access to water infrastructure as much as they did. And quite honestly, the bigger cities gave up some of their high priority projects They said they could move them to the next biennium, so some of the smaller cities on the list could have access to some funding. Now, when we first started, we were total grant and loan were about at $153 million. Through that give and take process, through that compromise process, and through some natural attrition in some of the projects, it was down to $93 million. About $55 million of that is in grant. So, at the list was provided to the State Water Commission Office of the Engineer on September 9th, and the list was presented to the State Water Commission at their October meeting, but the list was redesignated on a priority basis, and that was not the list. The list stayed the same. The priority designation was not something that we forwarded on to the Office of State Engineer. So what happened was only those cities with a high priority rating, as you can see on the sheet that has variable colors on it, only the ones in the green were the ones that received funding. The ones in the yellow, they were designated as low priority by the State Water Commission, Office of State Engineer, so they did not receive any funding consideration at that point in time. We did what you instructed us to do. We came together and put together a list. I hope that what the cities did was not an exercise in futility. If you look at the 12 cities in yellow, for $20 more million in grant funds, those cities could have their projects addressed. And I certainly believe that there is $20 million available out there for those cities. The governor has mentioned a couple of times at the State Water Commission meeting, and he mentioned again yesterday that they do indeed have some flexibility. With all due respect, I would like to see some of that flexibility exercised for the 12 cities that you see in yellow on the list. We also need to recognize that for those smaller cities, they don't have an engineering department. They don't have a city engineer. They probably only meet once a month as a city commissioner or city council. They cannot be as quick to react, as quick to market as the larger cities. So for them to try to get projects designed and in within that 30-day window is a struggle. They need a little bit more time, even if they use a consulting engineer. So I would like some flexibility for those 12 cities that are on the list. I think we all came together in good faith. And again, I believe there's funds out there, the $20 million in funds. And I would encourage Water Topics to encourage the State Water Commission to perhaps relook at those 12 cities that are listed in yellow on the list. Now, you also have, as one of the handouts, a little spreadsheet that I did last night. I have not had the chance to have Dave Laskowitz from the Office State Engineer review that, so it could be a little bit soft, admittedly. However, let's just quickly go through that, if you would humor me. As mentioned yesterday, total spending in Senate Bill 2020 is $644 million. There is estimated carryover of around $350 million. That could be, let's say, $300 to $350 million. So that leaves new money of $294 million. Based on what the governor told us yesterday, $10 million a month coming into the Resources Trust Fund times 24 months is $240 million. So you subtract that from the $294, now you have a need of $54 million. We have a line of credit for $200 million. That leaves a cushion of $146 million. I certainly think that from a business perspective, with that amount of cushion, that $20 million could be found for those 12 cities that are on the list. Some of you that are sitting around the table are...
Excuse me, Mr. Crosby, we have a question from Senator Sorbaugh for you.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, so you're... Yeah, it's... the $20 million you're talking, though, is from the line of credit, not grant.
That is, it's grant money from the line of credit.
Line of credit, though.
Yes. Thank you. And I'm sorry, I should have said Chairman Schmidt, Senator Sorbaugh. Some of you sitting around the table are looking at those cities in yellow and saying, those cities are from my district. They may or may not have talked to you about their infrastructure needs. I had a hand in that. My observation is that the Office of State Engineer operates under a great deal of pressure as it is. I did not think it was necessary that they needed to have any more pressure put on them to get some of these projects funded. So if you have not been talked to by your constituents, that is why. I think that the funding for these 12 cities can be move forward without having any additional pressure. I know some of you have had your cities talk to you, some of you haven't, so.
Mr. Crosby, I've got a question from Representative Zupke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite following this, and I wonder if we could, I see Dave Lasiewicz is in the audience, if he would be comfortable coming up and kind of walking through this?
I would be more than willing to do that. If Mr. Crosby, are you completed with your presentation on this so that he can make a response, or do you have some additional things that he may have to address as well?
Chairman Schmidt, I am completed, and I will stand though for any questions. So,
David, would you please come to the podium and address that if you would?
You might want to give him a couple minutes just to quickly look at it.
He's a quick study. He understands.
Good morning. For the record, Dave Lasiewicz. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for the Water Commission. In listening, without having seen this, I think one of the errors perhaps being made is that the $200 million is already needed to fund all of the categories and the projects that we have. There is not an additional $200 million that's used. That's not specifically designated to any individual project, but in order to afford all of the projects, the $664 million, I need that $200. So in order to shift money from, well, more money into the category, the city category, we will have to take it from some other category.
Do you have another category where you could?
That might be for someone in another pay grade.
I think they're in the room right now.
They may be. And anyway, that from his analysis, that was the first thing that sort of...
You didn't answer me, David.
Well, they may be.
No. Is there another category that you know of right now as you're standing in front of us that you could? I'm not saying you would, and I'm not saying we would suggest it. I would like to know, is there?
Well, I think you discussed a $70 million amount somewhat yesterday for projects that will not happen. One of the problems with using that $70 million... Now, I'm fairly conservative by nature here, so...
I can tell that by your haircut.
That's right. I don't pay for these. So, needless to say, my take would be, rather than being $200 million in the hole needing that line of credit, I would like perhaps to see that $70 million at least for this point in the biennium sit out there for a while, and if we can get through the biennium without needing it, I won't be $200 million in the hole. I'll only be $130 million in the hole for next biennium at a time when it appears we're going to be dealing with decreasing revenues. So that's a long way of saying, no, I don't necessarily see a place to say to take it from.
That's what I thought you meant.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions of David from the committee before we excuse him from the podium?
Okay,
go ahead.
I got prompted one more time. The $10 million, well, okay. History, right now we have, and we've only got 3 months of history in the revenue in the Resources Trust Fund. 15.8 was our August, 14.1, 10.6. We're definitely going the wrong way. Although it's extremely early, let's say I take that 10.6 and say that's my new number. I will have 3 more months of 10.6. Then we have the change in the Resources Trust Fund going from 6.5% to 4.5%. Using that 10.6 number, that would drop me to $7.3 million for perhaps the next 18 months. Bottom line is the revenue in the Resources Trust Fund may drop down to about $204.5 million. Again, I know this is extremely conservative or preliminary, if nothing else. 18 months is a long time, or 24 months. But $204.5 million is $63.8 million short of the revenue that's budgeted for this biennium. So, I guess, yeah. Just pointing out, we are certainly tracking dramatically, or could be tracking way behind where we need to be.
Representative Stradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's 5%, not 4.5.
Okay. Any other comments for David before we excuse him? Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, obviously, I've got some of those municipalities in yellow in my district, and one of the things that they've relayed to me is their, I guess, frustration that, you know, in the last several legislative sessions that the money that's been dispersed is going to, you know, to Western North Dakota more than any other time, and I tried to make the case to them that yeah, that's true, because they need it worse than everybody else, and I think we've recognized that situation, and that growth in Western North Dakota needs to be identified, and it needs some needs to be addressed. But I was criticized for not making surge funding more available to counties and cities outside of the western, you know, the oil producing counties. Well, that wasn't practical. But now you look at this, and you look at the funding mechanism. And yesterday we talked about interagencies working together in situations. There was, I think the example was given of a city that got some water treatment money to when they probably shouldn't have got it. But that wasn't the State Water Commission that did that. They got money from CDBG. It was the Department of Commerce. So we need to consider all the sources of funding that are available. And when you look at some of the high priority items in the list that Mr. Crosby provided us, you know, there's a number of funding sources that Western North Dakota has that the cities in yellow don't have the access to, whether it's impact money. It's you know, there's a litany of funding sources that for infrastructure in Western North Dakota other than the State Water Commission. But it's disturbing that, you know, for some of us that have these cities in yellow that have one funding source for this other than a user, you know, the local users paying more for and funding it themselves, this is their only place to get the funding. When you're replacing water mains, for example, is the State Water Commission, is that the only source of funding for that, you know, for some of these cities in oil country? I don't know. I mean, I think that's a discussion point that we should look at, and I don't know if that drops them from a high priority in this. There's no question they need that, but we should look at all the areas of funding that's available and not just one in this as well as other areas, because I think that's going forward, we're going to have to do that in every aspect of water. Is where, you know, we're used to the $600 and $700 million dollar a biennium project list, and if we don't have it, we're going to have to be very creative. You know, I could find the $20 million today. If we would have funded the Water Commission administrative staff from the general fund, the $20 million would be there. But we didn't do that, and you know, there's we have to be very creative as we go forward.
Any other comments, Representative Zupke?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that's the second time I've heard Western North Dakota in the last couple of days. The key word was litany. We don't just have a problem with water. We have a litany of problems. And trying to find financing sources for those have been extremely difficult because some of those projects just don't fit into a lot of categories. The dollars that are going out to Western North Dakota are being spent, and they are being spent very judiciously. And you just have to come out there, because even now today, people think that everything has just stopped out there. Things have not stopped. They're still building, they're still constructing, they're still expanding, they're still putting holes in the ground. Every hole in the ground is additional people that come to those areas. So I just want to be cautious when we start beating up on Western North Dakota here, because that's where those funds are coming from. And many of you have an agricultural background. You don't starve the milk cow. You feed the milk cow. We need housing. We need streets. You just can't imagine the litany of problems that are out there. So just for the record, thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? I have one, if I may. What factor put these cities into the low priority? Mr. Sandel, could you address that for me, please?
Mr. Chairman, when we prioritized, if it wasn't a project or wasn't rapid growth, the 3% average over 3 years, it would fall, it wouldn't be in the high priority. So ones that fall in high priority were areas where there's rapid growth, and we're serving new customers, new people, where there's expansions. That's how we determine it, because there was growing cities. So the cities that really got the $40 million for high priority municipal projects are ones that were having growth. So it was like West Fargo, Mandan, Dickinson, Williston, Watford City. Those were the communities that got funded at the last Water Commission meeting. So the other ones that are lower priority, they were improvement projects, and they weren't growing at that pace that we had to serve new areas. So that's why they were ranked lower.
Okay, 3% growth. And as I look at the cities that are on this list, I doubt that they would ever get to a 3% growth. And if that's the case, and we have others that come in that are, what happens to those rural communities that don't have that growth and perhaps do not have that taxable ability to pay for those needs that they have? How do we address that if the growth is the limiting factor? And I believe these communities will not get that 3% growth.
And at the last cost share meeting of the Water Commission, we removed that growth factor. We just use it for prioritization. They're eligible now. So that was the next step that we made to try and make it work for the cities and the rural water systems. So
because you're using it right now, because of 2020 says you can't.
We don't have enough money to fund all the projects. The list is much longer. So we're using it to prioritize, not to say that they're not eligible for.
Right, and that was what was in 2020. You're following 2020.
Correct.
I understand that. It's, to me, it's not an issue of what you're following because you are. It's an issue that these communities are not going to make that growth factor, and if that growth factor is a limiting factor that keeps them from ever getting these kind of funds, because there are many of them that do have the growth factor, how do we address these smaller rural communities in North Dakota to help them? And under what program do we do that?
Okay.
Are you completed, Mr. Crosby, with your presentation?
Chairman Schmidt, may I continue just for a couple more minutes, please?
Please, and then we need to move on with Mr. Volk.
I agree. I don't know if I mentioned this in my first comments or not, but under the water supply category in the cost share policy, it's up to 75%. Now, you will look at that list and see that when the cities came together, they said, you know, we can do 60% grant to loan, because they realize that they do have some taxing authority that other entities do not have. So they, I believe they were very gracious in saying, we can do the 60%. Now, part of my responsibility is to find the money, not just accept the fact that there is no money out there. And as Mr. Laskowitz commented, we are very early into any sort of revenue stream that can be designated or predicting any trending. I still believe that there is $20 million out there for those 12 cities so they can get their projects done, get them off the board, get them out of the way. They're not going to come back again. If we don't do that, when they come back again, the $20 million is going to be $22 million, and then it's going to be $25, and then it's going to be $28. Prices, cost of providing that infrastructure is not going to go down.
Thank you. Mr. Volk.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Chairman Schmidt.
Yours, and then after you finish there, then we'll take a break.
Thank you, Chairman Schmidt. For the record, my name is Eric Volk, Executive Director of North Dakota Rural Water, again representing rural and small water systems across the state. I'll make this quick here. If everybody can take a look at the two sheets I passed out, this just gives a summary of what we've been working on here for this biennium. The front kind of plain sheet is the summary of the money that the systems have received thus far, received a little bit in July, and then the 15%, the reimbursements there in the middle for about $4.1 million, and then just recently here in October, $7.6 million. So I've got the total off there, and then basing that off of the $50 million that was the funding bucket that we were working off of. The second page is the list of projects. This has pretty much stayed stable throughout the session, very similar to what I presented to both sides on the Appropriations Committee. Some different colors there. Green means they've been funded already. Black, we still need to be funded. And then red, there's one on hold all seasons, just waiting on some of the NAS stuff. So the $7 million that I mentioned would be Dakota Rural Water, that's based out of Finley, Garrison Rural Water, Garrison area, the Grand Forks Trail projects, Grand Forks and Trail counties, Missouri West, just the Morton County area, and then Welsh Rural Water, up out in the Grafton area. Those are some of the ones that we were looking at, hopefully getting some of the engineering started on this fall here yet, and they could be going this spring. Some of the others have a little work to do, I think. We tried to put a second or a the last two columns kind of give you an idea of where they're at in their planning and their construction. Final design means once they get that completed, then they can go to bid and then go to construction, and then the construction is when they thought they could get it done or when they could start the construction. So this is the list we work off of when we get together with the groups. We start this, actually going back to 2010 when I first started as executive director, got all the systems together. Nobody was left off the list. They all came in and talked about their projects. And at that point, an 11-13 biennium we worked off of, about a $15 million number. We had $45 million worth of projects on there, so we really needed to self-prioritize, and you know, several meetings with the Water Commission when funding was available, we looked at the projects and went down our list, and I think that biennium we received about $11 million. There was some give and take with Devil's Lake needing some extra money, so everybody had to, you know, give, you know, for the greater good, I guess. And then 13-15, we did receive about $55 million for projects, so that was very, very helpful. And this year we're working, this biennium we're working off of the $50 million. So this is our list. You know, there are some projects that come on, drop off. There's one in the Castro water area, City of Leonard. If you've watched the news on that, there's some arsenic issues down there, so they're working on a project there to take care of an arsenic issue. And arsenic is a primary drinking water standard. Some of those residents are way above what the recommended standard should be. It's a cancer causer, so that's very high on the list there, but that's a little bit ways off into the future.
Eric, if I may, I noticed on your list you've got Northeast Regional Water District for $13 million. And then on the city list, we've got Langdon down for a considerable amount of money as well. And we had discussions yesterday about regionalization of projects for water supply. And I did not attend, but I was aware of some gatherings with the city of Devil's Lake to work on this issue with Northeast and Langdon and Devil's Lake. And I've also had some discussions with Representative Munson. Is this one of these situations, because when I look at this $13 million for one project, the Langdon is over here for, what, $8.5 million, $21 million for one area. And I'm not saying that's a lot or it isn't a lot. I'm not saying it meets the needs or doesn't meet the needs, but it would seem to me that this would be one of those examples where we could use regionalization with Devil's Lake through Langdon. And is it egos that prevents us from doing that? Is it, why is this not a possibility for a regionalization project?
Chairman Schmidt, thanks.
hey, you're getting paid, buddy. You're getting paid.
Okay. you know, regionalization is a great concept. It's worked great for the state of North Dakota, helped a lot of small systems. You know, there's a lot of moving parts in that issue there. You know, not being from the area, not being on either side, I'm not going to speak on, you know, I've heard both sides, so I'm not going to try to pretend that I was sitting at all the meetings, and I don't live in Langdon, I don't live in Cavalier County, so
only Gordy's going to give me an answer, is he not?
I'm Gordon Johnson with Northeast Regional Water District. I can help with that question. Backing up to September 13th, the issue of Northeast application and Langdon's was an issue. And in fact, Todd more or less told me we need to get our act together. And it probably is somewhat an issue of egos. But with Todd's urging to work on an agreement, and with the temptation of the 75% grant as a regional project working together, I've been meeting with Langdon. It's looking better. In fact, in the last week, City of Langdon wanted to join us in sending a letter to the State Water Commission with a joint effort in mind. And I think that actually looks pretty good. There's some questions to answer yet. But we fully intend to submit a revised cost share request, hopefully for the December meeting, to get going on design. And you're absolutely right about the regionalization. That is the way to go. And it is silly to fund a small town water plant when you can't work together. I mean, if we can work together. And right now, the city of Bell's Lake is kind of poised to be another regional supplier. They're already helping out Greater Ramsey on the north end of their system, Tri-County through Greater Ramsey, City of Lakota is a possible thing, and Commissioner Arnie Berg would tell you that's the way to go, and he wants to see the whole thing as a big regional effort. The other thing I'd mention is we were actually ranked ineligible for nothing but loan, so until Todd told me that there was a good chance of the 75% working together, I really had nothing to take to the city. I mean, 21, 24 million alone is impossible for our area. There's just not enough there to support it.
Okay, well, thank you. Just a thought. You can't drink an ego, and you can't pay the bills with pride.
I agree 100%.
And then we're going to have to start taking a look at these situations and taking a serious look. And you heard the discussion yesterday on regionalization.
Absolutely.
And we need to take that seriously. And we need to look at that. And at one time I had asked Mr. Crosby to give me an idea of how many communities would benefit financially from a regional system. And I believe it was in the 60s. I think it was actually 68 communities. My rural water system serves some communities. They turn the valve on and they build their residents. A very simple system. Yes, they gave up some ownership. Yes, they gave up some pride, but they got water. They got it every time they turn the spigot on. And I think we put too much judgment on an ego and pride to our detriment. So with that, thank you kindly, sir.
You bet. Thank you.
Any further comments, Mr. Volk? Oh, you didn't ask for the committee's comments either. Does the committee have any other comments? And I apologize for getting on a soapbox there, folks, but I think it needs to be said. Any other comments? If not, thank you, Mr. Volk. And let's take a 15-minute break. Nelson, get in here. You had plenty of time to do that before. I was impressed with Representative Nelson saying he knew where to get his $20 million, and I figured he was cashing in his grain crop early. With that, I'd like to mention a couple of changes in the agenda, last-minute changes. I believe that we've done a lot of discussion on the project prioritization process, so there's no need for the state engineer to, again, address that. Second change is that we're going to have Western Area Water Supply present before the Bank of North Dakota. And then the third quick change is that during the break there was some that would probably like to have some public comment on the discussion that we just had. And so I want to give those folks the opportunity to do so. So at this time I'm going to call for public comment on the prioritization project we just had. So, please come forward, sir. And please state your name.
My name is Russ Dupont. I'm the Beulah City Coordinator.
Mayor Bierke was not able to make it today. He had an appointment out of state with Leagues of Cities, so he apologized for not making the meeting. Then with the city of Beulah, and Beulah's been kind of an essential need to the state. We've been inundated with power, coal, oil. You know, we've kind of been out there for everybody throughout the whole process. When oil wasn't prevalent, Beulah was there, you know, creating man camps and crew camps and helping the industry grow in North Dakota so North Dakota could grow. And we looked at the list, and when we talked to Blake, we were on the list for a water treatment project. And now we got the list back here about 10 minutes ago. I see the list, and Beulah's been taken off of it. We don't know why. It was sent to the engineer's office, and maybe it's a misprint. I don't know. But we are not highlighted on this list that I have in front of me that Blake gave me. The city of Beulah, we kind of go through some ups and downs. We've been in the paper here for the last 4 weeks. Most of you probably realize we got an urea plant going up in Beulah. It was kind of a well-kept secret. Jamestown, there's a lot of publicity on their urea plant. A lot of money was being spent. A lot of help was being done. Beulah didn't need it. The plant kind of had their own system. They didn't need the help. They just did it, you know, and that's kind of how they operate up there. Well, in the recourse of it, we were looking at here about 2 weeks ago as 500 people coming to the city for a crew camp, for a crew camp to be put in. By spring, they're talking 700 plus people coming to help build this thing for a peak, is what we were told. Now, the crew camp was sized down to 230. Well, they went through the process. We got the land. Everything was all there. Everything was ready to go. And then the developer decided that it was unfeasible due to the time constraints going through the process, you know, process we all got to go through on the government side, the advertising, some of the public outcry, some of the public concerns, the public that wanted it. And the process took too long, so they couldn't get in the ground. So the project became unfeasible. Well, now Mercer County's looking at more. They're actually looking at more crew camp type situations for workforce housing to help with the urea plant. The city of Beulah kind of got put in the middle of something here. I've only been in Beulah for 4.5 years as city coordinator. When I showed up, they were just like every other little town state. They were just a sleepy little town. They're making by. Their older people were more than their younger people. The births were less than the deaths. When I got there, things kind of turned around. They got to the point where they needed to expand. The 60-some houses were permitted in 2 years. They went from $250,000 worth of worth permit to Beulah. In 2010, 2011, they're at $10 million. 2012, they're at almost $13.4 million. 2014, we're at $14 million. This is improvement to the city. Building houses, building, fixing up old houses, new infrastructure, a hotel, you know, a lot was happening in Beulah. Well, what wound up happening is we needed to do an update on a water treatment plant. It's been 30 years. Initial water treatment plant was put in, and then it needed to be updated in the 70s when the big boom came with the power, while the power got in there. So we updated the plant. They said, well, how much do you need? Well, they figured Beulah would grow to 5,000 at least, because they had about that in town with the crew camps that were currently there to build all the power plants and the mines in the area. So we built this big water treatment plant. Well, when you have a population that's dying for several years and the money wasn't there, the plant wound up serving its purpose, 30-some years old. It needs to be fixed. So we go for a loan. We go for the grants. We go just like every other city in the state. We feel, well, we should be able to apply just like everybody else, and if we meet the qualifications, we should be there. Well, we've done diligence. We're using sales tax. We're using low-interest loans of 1%. We've got applications in all over the place for our money. And we came to the Water Commission, and we needed, it's a 60-40 split. It's $5.8 million, and we needed $304 million, you know, $3.4 million, to help us offset this thing. Well, long story short, we talked to the Water Commission, and there were several opposed. Not several, there were some that are seeing the need of this type of water facility in our community. But some are concerned about why didn't we hook up to Southwest Water. And it's like you talked earlier, regional water supply. Regional water supply, it's great, but it doesn't always fit. Now, what would happen? We're on Southwest Water. We're supposed to pick a number, size our line. Well, how big is Beulah going to be in 20 years? Are we going to be the 5,000 we projected?
Are we going to be the 3,000 and lose population? We don't know because we don't have a crystal ball. Well, so they did the studies. The studies showed that no water can, Beulah can provide its own water. We were actually providing water to Zap to sell to Southwest Water until they got their facility built out by the lake. We actually have a line hooked into Southwest Water to push water out, but we can't take it back. It doesn't come back right in that line. It can be pushed out, but it can't come back. So we were brothers, we were friends, we were shaking hands, and they were trying to keep things going. We were partners with Southwest Water. And then they got their system in place, and we shut everything down. And they provide the water. And they also come into the city, and we've been working with them to help provide areas we can't get to because of the feasibility. We have subdivisions that are in Southwest Water, but they're in the Beulah Water District. So Beulah expanded their extraterritorial 1 mile, and now here we're sitting. Now Southwest Water's in our water district. Now we're trying to work with Mary up in Dickinson to make sure, how is this legal thing going to work? Your law state, you're there first, we pay you royalty. We're there first, you don't come in. You know, but now we're getting to the point is, well, Beulah's been completely surrounded except for 2 miles by Southwest Water. And they are providing water to some of our subdivision, outskirt farmers, things, people that we can't get the water to right now. What's going to happen in 3 years? Is the legal going to come in? Are we going to have problems? We don't know. But the city of Beulah, we have shown diligence on everything. We've been working on this for 2 years. We're in a, next week, Tuesday, we're going to be signing contracts. We need to get our water plant fixed in 2 years or else we're in trouble, you know. So we're signing contracts and we're looking at contracts with the engineering companies. We've done all the studies. We've done all the performances. All we have to do now is sign the check and say, start. Get bids out by spring. And we're going. Well, we thought we were on the list. We were doing diligence. We got everything in place. And now we find out that we're not on the list. And that came out of the state engineering office. So.
Okay. Thank you so very kindly. Mr. Samuel, I would ask, is there any explanation, or would you like to respond to Mr. Duquan's statement of he does not know why he is not on the list?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the list that he's referring to is a League of Cities list. It's not a State Water Commission list. The State Water Commission list still has Beulah on the list as a project. So this is something that Blake brought up, and I haven't even seen Blake's lists yet today. So he just had 25 sheets that went around. So it is on our list. It's just it got prioritized lower. We gave the $40 million to the fastest growing cities first. So.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Okay, so it's on the state engineer's list, so Blake, the question would then come to you, sir.
Again, for the record, Blake Crosby with League of Cities. The list that I originally submitted to the state engineer's office after the meeting in August had the city of Beulah on there. So I don't know what got lost in the translation, but my spreadsheet had the city of Beulah on there. Again, remember that we did not prioritize. We just submitted a list. But both Beulah and Langdon were on that list.
Okay, Mr. DuPont, does that answer your question then, sir? That you are on the state engineer's list for funding?
That sounds good then, because it's okay. About this list.
I'm sure that does sound good to you, sir. Is there any other questions, Representative Strawley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there enough supply from Southwest in the area to supply Beulah 100%?
I do not know the answer to that question. I see Larry back there. I know Mary's not with us. Larry, would you care to come forward and answer that question for us, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. At the present time,
please, Larry.
Oh, sorry about that. Larry Myers, director of the Southwest Water Authority, and its current chairperson at this time. There is not, the pipeline size is not large enough, as I understand it, Mr. Chairman, at this time. However, that doesn't mean that a new line could not be brought in from Zap, the treatment plant from Zap, period.
Follow up, Mr. Strawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this seems to be a perfect example of why we should just do the transmission line, let the rural water system take care of it.
Any other other comments? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Duper.
Larry, I think you can take a chair unless we need you back here.
Yesterday, I think you were here yesterday.
Yes, I've been at every Water Commission meeting since last March.
That's, you know, that's a good... I appreciate you doing that, because I think if more people from cities and from the public would attend those meetings, well, first of it might facilitate them moving those meetings out of that little basement room into a room that people could actually be comfortable in. But I think that going forward, we're going to see more public in that at Water Commission meetings, and we need to see that. But yesterday, I believe it was Commissioner Swenson that brought up the question as to, are we going to, what is the State Water Commission expected to fund? Are we expected to fund maintenance projects or any project that comes through, or are we going to have a criteria that they use to fund that? So I guess my question to you is expand this water treatment improvements is a broad term. Is there an expansion piece to this that allows you X many more treated gallons per day, or what is the improvement project look like?
The improvement project could consist of bringing the water plant up to the state of the art. It's going to have a reverse osmosis system. It's currently a lime system. And we're currently running two plants. We're running our 1960s plant and our 1980s plant. And we run the two plants in coinciding with each other with the last update we did on it back when the boom was coming through for the Beulah. And right now we're looking at improving it to a reverse osmosis. And then we will be putting in a new lagoon system to help with the flush water. We'll have to put a new lagoon system in. So that's all going to be brand new. And then we're going to retrofit the plant. I think it was Mayville. Is that correct? Mayville did a similar thing, and they had very good success with this, taking their lime softening and putting it into reverse osmosis. So it is an older plant, but we're retrofitting it into a new plant.
So is there more, will you be able to treat more water in this plant than you are currently treating?
I would have to ask my engineer to clarify with that.
Well, you know, and
How much more?
How much more?
Yeah.
It's roughly 20% more.
About 20% more growth, so it's going to be more. We're currently at 5,000 we can treat with it. We have about 3,600 people in town right now, and there'll be 20% more. As you know, and some of our downfall on this, as I say earlier, is we were looking at 3,600 people, okay? That's what we had. 2 weeks ago, we were looking at increasing that to 500 more in a matter of 4 months. So sometimes with the Southwest system, now we just had comment that, oh, the line's not big enough. Well, when is it going to be too small, and when is it going to cause hindrance to us? And right now, we're kind of in a situation, too, to where when we get to this reverse osmosis, it's going to be a better deal than having this lime softening, because the two waters might match better. And if Southwest has a problem, maybe it's going to be these pipelines and these oils. How many times have they leaked into the water? What happens when that lake gets polluted? You know, we're going to have everything on one system. Is that good? You know, sometimes having that redundancy may help a little bit. And we can provide water back out if we need to. So at one time, Beulah was looked at as a regional supply system, and then something happened, it didn't happen, but I don't know all the history on that.
Senator Lewick, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. DuPont, you had stated that the City of Beulah could supply water to Zap in a line. Is that correct? You have been doing that?
That up to last, that was in 2012, I think, is when they shut it off.
Can you tell me why that water cannot flow back from the Southwest water through that very same line from Zap?
Because of the pumping system, that's how it's placed in there. It has to do with the engineering. It doesn't allow the water to come back into the facility correctly, because it's coming back into it has to come back through the water plant in a reverse cycle. You're creating water and it's going out. And when it comes back into the plant, you're back flushing everything. So at this time, the engineering behind it wasn't feasible.
Good. Continue. I work with a little bit of water myself, okay. And that to me does not seem to be a very viable reason to not re-engineer something to be able to change that water flow.
And then there was other cost studies done too to show that we'd have the same quality water as Southwest. We would be under control of the Southwest. We wouldn't have any freedoms of our own. There were studies done and it showed that the feasibility of going to the Southwest was not feasible for the city of Beulah at the time they did it. I wasn't here at that time, so I don't have a lot of history on it, but there was a lot of different things that happened in that process of when the line was sized to when they said no, it was voted by the residents not to go on the system, and then when the line was done, it was done, you know, and then reversing it wasn't, the capacity wasn't there. And at this time, I mean, the city of Beulah, we've got loans out, we got everything out, we have everything in place. We're in a situation, we don't do something, we're going to do something. We have to do something, and we're going to have to take the burden if we don't, you know, I mean, we're just asking for every other city some help on this, you know. And
thank you, Mr. DuPont. I think you got your answer that you are on the state engineer's list.
I want to thank everybody for their time. You know, I don't do a lot of public speaking, as you can tell. I have to get up in front of an eight-person council every once in a while on planning and zoning, so I appreciate your time. And
well, we appreciate you coming forward because we realize it is difficult to do that, but we give you all the latitude that we can possibly do, so thank you for coming forward.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, with that, let's move on to our next agenda item. Mr. Dawson, you got 5 minutes.
Chairman Schmidt, committee members, I need less than 5 minutes. Before you should be a memo entitled North Dakota's Red River Valley Water Groups. The first problem with the memo was to come up with what's in the Red River Valley. This is the entities in the Devil's Lake, Cheyenne River Basin, and the Red River Basin, but not the Mouse River Basin. It was difficult for me to determine what the Red River Valley was, so I called the Office of State Engineer and they helped me out with that, and they also helped me out with the list itself and all the entities on it. What I did then was to put a little of a description about each of those groups so that you could understand their point of view, who makes them up, what's their basic mission. If I look at this globally, you'll see that the first part is state political subdivisions, which is made up of water resource districts, joint water resource districts, rural water systems, and irrigation districts. The next section deals with international groups, and then the last group relates to special interest groups and special governmental. The special governmental are statutory and are at the end of the list and include the Garrison Diversion Conservancy District and the Lake Agassiz Water Authority.
Thank you. And that's in response to Senator Wardner's request, trying to identify all those entities, because it was very confusing for a lot of us as to who is who in the Red River Valley, and I think this will help. So that is in response to his request. Thank you, Tim. Next item, presentation by representatives of the City of Valley City and Lisbon on Cheyenne Valley water issues. Please state your name.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Mary Lee Nielsen. I'm a city commissioner for Valley City, and we work together in the Cheyenne Valley. And so we have Jay Giemer, from councilman from Lisbon, also speaking. And with us, we have the city administrator from Valley City, Dave Shelkoff, and our engineer, KLJ, Chad Peterson, and Tracy Esslinger from Moore Engineering. So
the podium is yours, ma'am.
Okay. We're going to try to help get you back on schedule, so we can go through this very fast, because mainly what this is just an update for you and a big thank you for what we've been able to do so far in our flood-prone areas in the Cheyenne River Valley. As you go through it real quickly, you can see that the need for the project, you're looking at Valley City first, severe flooding in all those different years, the record floods that we're doing, the public need. What we focused on for our first phase was public safety. We wanted to get our college students and our high school students away from the edges of the river. And so on our first phase, we worked on the Valley City State University and through that area. As you keep flipping through, if you look at the project history, we have had a feasibility study from the Corps of Engineers, and we've updated hydraulics. And our phase one, going through it, we have bought out 32 properties for $3.3 million. Phase two, we've bought out another 20 properties at $2.3 million. And now we're looking to phase three. And that's what we're going to be going into now. And As you keep flipping through, you can see what we did in the University District. We finally did get College Street open. Everyone cheered at Valley City State when they had a through road again. And you can see the flood walls through there. We all, not just flood walls, we also put in the pump stations. And this is the hard part for me. If you look at those pictures of the pump station, that was the most impressive part of the project, and it's all underground. People can't even see the best part, you know? and it is pretty awesome. Of course, part of it is bank stabilization, so we've been working on a lot of that with the Cheyenne River, with the Devil's Lake water and the different flows. We have had erosion, and so that is one big part of our project, too. Our future phases, what we're going to be starting right now is we finished doing borings throughout the city now, and now we're going to finish out the rest of the city. So the master plan for the rest of it is what we're working on now. And as you turn the next page, you can see our main street. In 2009, we had that main street closed for months because of, you know that our sewer system went down too. And so we do not have a main street in Valley City for months. And so that is our next huge priority that we'll be working on. We've been able to do this with help from the State Water Commission and your help at the legislature. You've seen how important it is to Valley City and Lisbon that we don't have that kind of flooding going on again. So, Valley City has worked hard. Our citizens passed a sales tax to help pay for it. And, of course, for all of this, we're looking for FEMA certification so we can get out of buying that flood insurance that is so expensive. So, I'm going to turn it over to Jerry, if that's okay.
Ma'am, could you repeat your name, please?
Mary Lee Nielsen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Chairman Schmidt. My name is Jerry Gamer. I'm with the City of Lisbon. And Mary's pretty much covered a lot of it. We've kind of been tag team in this flood situation for several years now, and she's covered a lot of what we need to talk about. But to continue on with the presentation, you can see the history of the flooding in the City of Lisbon, dating back to 69 to up to 2011, where we had 3 years in a row, 2009 being the worst. That next page there, that picture where it shows Cheyenne River, that's a half a block off of Main Street. And you can't see it, but there's a bridge under there that's 4 feet underwater that gives you an idea what we were up against in 2009. Going on to the next page, there's the map of our two phases that we've been working on. Section A. And section A is completely done. Section C, you can't really see the C there very good, but we are at about 95% completion on that. Going forward into next year, we'll be working over on the other side of the river on section E. And you can kind of see the end result. This is down in our park in section A. That is completed already. We did a lot of moving of structures and different parts of the park to get to that point. There's a flood wall we had to put in place due to a FEMA lot that was in our way. We didn't have the room to expand our clay out, so that's also something we'll be working on in the future. If anybody's got any ideas on how to buy some land back from FEMA, let me know. There's just more pictures there of, again, putting in a workstation. Like Mary said, it's an amazing process, but you don't get to see it when it's done. So, we'll be going on to Levy E next year, and we're doing studies on B and D at this current time. We're kind of like Valley City. We're working on how to fund it. We thank you guys so much for the funding we've gotten currently. And we look forward to working with you guys in the future. And we also have some public meetings coming up also to run all this through to see how the people of the City of Lisbon are liking what's being done. So, questions?
Does the committee have any questions? Senator Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the question I guess I have is not necessarily about the spending or anything else. Mary, it's about the the phase one permanent flood protection pictures that you have there.
Okay.
Can you just identify something for me? Answer a question. What it is I haven't seen this type of bank stabilization before.
Oh.
We're using the logs.
Okay.
Can you tell me where that idea comes from, and then also the length of expectation of something like that?
Okay, I'm going to ask Chad Peterson from KLJ to come forward too. The reason, you know, we have a commission that is really trying to think green in many ways, and this is the new way of doing this type of embankment stabilization. And Chad, you can.
Chad Peterson, KLJ. The intent of the logs are, it's basically bioengineering. It's the logs and the tree that's in the that's put in there is basically there to capture soil and stuff to basically re-establish growth within that bank stabilization there. So as far as the life of it, I mean, the intent is for it to grow and re-establish itself. So.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Lewick, they do a lot of that in the state of Oregon and Washington for stream bank stabilizations. They take a number of cuttings of willows, put them in a bundle, they're called fascines, lay them out along the bank, and they layer those bundles, and then they look for that regrowth. So it's been done out west for many years. Thank you so very kindly. If there are no further questions, Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to Representative Zupke in our earlier conversation, you know, you're on. I guess I'm curious of the timelines of where you're at in the phases that you're currently in. Are you able to get the work done that's been funded, and then going forward, I think you're on the hook for $30 million, correct?
Yep.
If funding becomes an issue, is there a possibility that we could relook at that? You know, every conversation we've had in the last 2 days has been relooking at dollars on from a sliding scale going up. We may quite honestly have to start looking at those project lists on a sliding scale going downward. I'd just like you to respond to how the timelines for the funding has worked for you up to now, and then going forward, what flexibility do you see?
Representative Nelson, so far, I mean, the timelines, with the construction seasons and everything, it seems like to me that we are kind of in between the legislative funding and how it goes. So we're spending our money, you know, as fast as it is allowed to be spent. But if we would have been on a one-year difference, we would be spending all your money in the biennium. But we're kind of in the off years on yours. But there's no problem, you know, getting the money spent. When we started this project, you know, we thought, how many phases do we talk in? What do we do? And so I would say that we, you know, we try to be aggressive in what we can, you know, do for a project, but we recognize the understand that, you know, we've been hearing about the oil revenues and everything going down. And so, I mean, we will work with whatever we can get, but we have prioritizations, and that's why we're having public meetings now to prioritize, because we do recognize that the funding situation might change. And so we're going to try to build in any ways that we can, you know, on, if we have this much money, what would we do? If we have this much money, what would we do? We would realize it, you know, if the money kept coming in like it was, we might have gotten it done in three phases. But, it, you know, the way it might look, it's going to take more than that, and we will work through it, you know.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just to understand this a little bit better, in your presentation, which you went through very quickly, but you know, but I think quite thoroughly, I was impressed. It appears to me like the highest priority, looking from a 10,000 foot view, would be that Main Street area, and is that's in the mechanism now, right?
Yes, it is, sir. And like I said, our number one priority was human life. You know, and so that's what we look at first. The Main Street, yes, economically, that is very definitely our next thing on the list.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions?
I might just add, Chairman Schmidt and Representative Nelson, that I heard it here earlier tonight too, or today too, that the longer you progress, or the longer you put off something, the more expensive it gets. And
That is a significant concern for Lisbon, because once we get across on the business side of this river, a lot of that's going to be concrete, and concrete never goes down. So somebody had mentioned earlier about you know, every year that costs go up, when we get into that levy, the longer we put it off. And again, like Mary said, you know, every foot of levy we get done with, we don't have to put a kid or anybody, for that matter, out there sandbagging ever again. They're done, and the sooner we get it done, the better. So.
Can I just qualify one more
thing? Absolutely.
Our Main Street project, I mean, it is on right away, but we have to work through the Army Corps of Engineers, and we have to do a lot of things because we are right on the river there. And so, I mean, it is what we're going to be working on next, but the permitting process is what may slow us down in that one.
Any further questions? If not, very well done. Thank you. Let us move on now to our adjusted agenda item. And Western Area Water Supply, Jarrett.
Morning, Chairman, Governor Dalrymple, committee members. For the record, I'm Jarrett Wirtz, Executive Director of Western Area Water Supply Authority. Here today to give you an update on the progress of the Western Area Water Supply Project. Just handing out the slideshow that's for your notes to take with you. With that, just to get a reminder for everybody, the founding members of WAS include the City of Williston, Williams Rural Water, McKenzie County Water Resource District, RMT Water Supply, Commerce Authority, and BDW Rural Water Association. We're just going to go through kind of an animation of the infrastructure that was brought into WAS and what's been built with the funding that we've received so far. It's important to note that this is a large regional system, and we're taking that to the next level, I think, and really trying to reduce the cost that we see incoming. We'll talk about some of that as we move forward. Eliminating infrastructure that was not needed and using that regional concept. So the first thing that was brought into WAS was the Williston Water Treatment Plant. There was also a line in place from Ray to Wild Rose and Ray to Stanley. You can also see the numerous truck depots that were brought in. That was previous infrastructure that those cities were operating. Down on the south side, there was a small portion of transmission line that had started in McKenzie County to deliver water to Watford City and McKenzie County Rural Water. In addition to that, there was also a Watford City plant and some depots out in Keeneland and Watford that were already in place before the WAS project was created. Up in the northern part of BDW, you'll see that transmission line from Crosby going to Fortuna and Columbus was in place already as well. And that really starts us out with the improvements now. And when we came to you in 2011, we were first given $110 million in loans to start building the project out. The basis of that was to get the transmission lines in, which consisted of numerous reservoirs and pump station as well, in addition to the water depots that needed to be built right off the bat to get the revenue coming in. That first transmission line went into, on the north side, would be from Williston to Ray to supply that area with an additional source of water, as we already had the plant at RMT that was just expanded previous to the creation of WAS. We also completed the line from Wild Rose to Crosby, completing that network to get WAS water up to that northern region. On the south side, we built the line, continued the line, just that was built in the McKenzie County, all the way down to Watford City and around to the east side of Watford, where we built a new water depot as well. There was also a transmission line built on the west side of Williston. That was in a cost share effort. It's another thing we've tried to capitalize on, is getting not only industry, but in this instance, we used Electric Co-op, Basin Electric, cost share a large majority of that line to get power or to get water up to one of their power plants. So it was a good fit for us as well. You can see all the storage reservoirs that went in and the truck depots that were placed in there, as well as the first expansion of the Williston Water Treatment Plant. That treatment plant was a 10 million gallon per day plant. with the amount of customers that we were adding throughout the five counties. There was an expansion that needed to take place right away to take handle those water needs. In addition to that, we started building our first rural water project through the WAS system in western McKenzie County in the Alexander area. Just to note, there was also a plant up at Crosby that the BDW system was going to utilize. That plant was aging infrastructure and was in dire need of replacement and renewal. This project, by bringing that transmission line, regionalization eliminated that plant up there. There's no need for a plant in Crosby. Same thing in Watford City. This was a large reason why WAS was driven to this regional concept. There was also a plant expansion needed in Watford City with the growing needs that they had. They were looking at building an RO plant. Again, that was eliminated, and that cost of maintenance and renewal costs has went away now, and we're just putting that money into one plant at Williston. 13 to 15 improvements, that was another $119 million that we received through the legislature, majority of loan and some grant, $39.5 million in grants, $79.5 million in loans. There was still some transmission line work that was needed to do or be done in this phase as well, but we started doing more rural water work in this phase. As you can see, we also needed to expand the Williston Water Treatment Plant again. This expansion was now from 14 to 21 MGD as more and more people came into the area and more communities were growing. We needed to expand that. Another transmission line around this west side of Williston was to get more water up to the north. That helped not only our whole system on the north, but also helped the city of Williston out. There's a large amount of development on the west and north side of Williston. Another storage tank on the east side of Williston. A transmission line down into the Epping area that will service numerous developments in that area. Also a transmission line out to Keene. We eliminated the source. I shouldn't say we eliminated. We have a redundant source now. McKenzie County Water Resource District was getting water from the tribe. There was some issues with the amount of capacity and supply they were receiving from the tribe. We also had a lot of requests, numerous requests in that area from the McKenzie County Water Resource District for additional hookups that the tribal source could not handle, so we needed to bring another water supply out into that area. So as you can see, we've kind of made the loop in McKenzie County with transmission lines. We also started building a large amount of rural water projects. As you can see, the screen will fill up with purple. These are projects that are already been constructed or are under construction right now and getting finished up. As we look at the funding that we're seeing in 2015, 2017, this would be the $80 million that Todd talked about yesterday. Originally, we talked about the $60 million of WAS receiving funding for. We were able to leverage that a little bit with taking out additional loans that will be covered with domestic sales and trying to really get back to that traditional water system, getting a 75% grant, 25% loan, as most of you know. Majority of the dollars, and we'll talk about that a little later, that have went into WAS have been loan dollars, and we're just starting to see some of that grant money. So it was one way that we could get additional projects, as we know that the budget conditions that we were in during the session allowed WAS to have to cut some of its projects. We still felt that we had to try to find ways to get those projects built, so this was one of the ways that we could do that. Also, some improvements to the plant. There'll be a west or an east by or east transmission line. There's also a transmission line in Ray that's going to be built. Transmission line in Tioga up to the community there. As a lot of these lines were sized several years ago, 10 to 20 years ago, and as the needs have grown, we've had to expand little portions of these, and we wait as long as we can in some areas, delaying those funds and using the funds to get water out to more members. Now we're having to come back in and try to do these improvements as we can. There'll also be another line put towards Stanley. That'll be another redundant line because of the insufficient supply of water that was through the pipeline there that they're not receiving. And with their growth that they're having, we're having to build another transmission line there. Also a South Watford City bypass. Again, that was only built 4 years ago, but with the amount of growth that Watford City has had, on the east side especially, we're seeing that we need to get more water around the city, so there'll be another transmission line built around the south side to not only help the growth of Watford, but also to get more water out to eastern McKenzie County as well. You can start to see the green now will fill up with rural water projects. These are all going to get built or are being built right now. You can see there's a lot of projects going in, and we soon that whole screen, you know, will be covered, and we have projects designated in each of those areas of the remaining areas that are left to be unshaded. Just to look at where we're at, approved contracted funding of $309 million so far. Of that, we've contracted $244, remaining $64. That $64 will be contracted by the middle of this summer, of next summer of 16, with the majority of those projects being completed at the end of that year. So we'll be used up a majority of all of our money when we come back to you folks in 2017. Still looking at a project estimate of a $479 million. Meeting the need. There has been, as everybody knows, what's going on in Western North Dakota. There's a lot of people and a lot of things that need water. You start thinking about the schools, the hospitals, the housing developments. You name it, they all need water, and that's what we're doing right now. We've constructed over 800 miles of pipe. So far, we still have 1,200 miles left to install. Numerous pump stations, reservoirs, and plants upgrades will be needed and have already taken place as well. This summer, we had the privilege of having Governor Dalrymple there at our ceremony to commission the plant at Williston to 21 MGD, and we even allowed him to push some buttons and play with the plant. Some more things that go along with that. Easements. Easements are a big thing. They're not getting any easier to get, as most of you know, across the state. We are in very sensitive easement areas in McKenzie and Williams County, Montreal. Nobody wants a pipeline on their land anymore. People are getting really fatigued of easements and having people on their property. It's really tough when you're not paying for the easements. We don't pay for rural water line easements. We've only been paying for the transmission line, and nowhere near, when we do pay, it's nowhere near the oil and gas companies what they're paying. We wouldn't be able to do this project if we had to pay for easements. We looked at, you know, over 2,000 miles of pipe. You start adding that up at $150 to $300 a rod that everybody else is in the oil and gas industry are giving. We'll be coming to you folks for some more money. So we have tried to work around that a little bit. We are really pushing easements right now, trying to get projects shovel ready. I don't think you'll find a project in the state that's going to be as shovel ready as WAS. We're going out and getting the easements for projects that may not get funded for the next 2 to 4 years to make sure that the projects are designed, easements are taken care of, and in some cases we're even bidding these projects out before we have the money as alternates, and then when the money is received that we can award those projects immediately. So when we talk about shovel ready, I don't think there is a project that I know that's going to be as shovel ready as WAS. One other thing is land reclamation. That's been a huge thing in Western North Dakota, is the amount of pipelines going in. The companies that aren't rehabbing the land and reclaiming it to the proper standards. We were hiring a lot of companies to do this for us. As you most know, a lot of the companies, the pipeline companies that were having build these lines were from out of state. As soon as the job was done, they were out of here. Well, the reclamation issues were left with us. We were hiring companies to come and take care of that. We realized that wasn't a permanent fix. We're not going anywhere. We're going to be here forever. We've spent over or close to $500,000 in reclamation equipment, road graders, tractors, seeders, skid steers, backhoes, pickups, trailers, dump trucks, you name it. If that is one thing that we have found that landowners do appreciate, that we have staff that go out and meet with them. We've been able to hire residents, longtime residents of that area or those areas that we serve, individuals that are recognized in the public, and old ex-farmers, people that have done it before and know what the ground needs to look like. I think that's one thing that we have done to try to alleviate some of the issues, that people know that if there is a problem after we're done going through there, that we'll come back in and fix it in the correct fashion. So that is one thing that we have done, and the board has supported as well. Another positive thing is the bid prices. As we get into a little bit lower oil prices, there's a lot of people looking for work. We've noticed that the bid prices are coming in lower than we've noticed in the past, so that is a good thing, allowing us to get more projects built with less dollars. Here's really the driving thing. We've showed this slide numerous times, but again, it's a floating target. Really, that thing on the bottom, new wells to be drilled, is really the factor that drives all of this. The latest number that we have from the Department of Mineral Resources is that 58,000 wells. As you can see, in 14, it was 70,000. Price of oil goes up. I don't know what that number goes to. Nobody has that crystal ball. So we kind of have to float the system with that. As you can see, though, when those wells change, the peak population changes. As Representative Zuppi talked about, any time a new hole is drilled, there's that many more people that need to take care of those wells and everything else that comes along with that. But we still remain around that project cost of $479 million. You can see the population just out of the trends that we look at and where they sit. Just really shows in 2011 when we were here and had the information that we did, and you can see now where we're at. You know, it's doubled, if not tripled, on some of those.
Good, if I may. I understand that the population projections were done by NDSU, some by the state, some by the Petroleum Council. For example, and Representative Zumkin knows this because we discussed it, the infrastructure for some of the water supply with these communities was based on population projections. But by whose population projections? Because it seems, at least from what I've been told, that they vary. And so what are the project projections by NDSU versus the other entities? Are they the same, Jared, or are they not?
Chairman Schmidt, the numbers we have used are based on the NDSU housing study that was, I think, funded by the state of North Dakota. So we're using the numbers that were provided to you. I know there is different ones put out by different entities, but we figure that we should be using the state's numbers.
Is that, when you say minerals, the numbers that you got from the state, are they the same as NDSU, or does NDSU do that for the state?
Chairman Schmidt, I believe NDSU was authorized to do the study for the state. As far as the wells go, that is a number that comes from the Department of Mineral Resources, Lynn Hills. As we talk about that growth, here's just a slide of Williston. You can see Williston was around 7 square miles. We're now looking at City of Williston being around 23 square miles. Same thing in Watford City. Went from a little over a section of 800 acres to now over 5,000 square acres that encompasses the city. Here's really the tail of everything to make sure that we're on track as we look at these water demands. The domestic water demands for 14 and 15, 14 is in red, 15 is in blue. You can see how that number's above that line. We're seeing about 1 million gallons a day difference on an average day, so there are more people coming. There's more water being used. Industrial water demands, as we start talking about, we'll get into that in the payback of those loans that were used. You can see how we started out in 2015 selling a lot of water, and you can kind of see how it dropped off. That blue line started to go underneath in about March and never really got back above the red line. So we were able to capture a large amount of sales in the first couple of months of 2015. That has really dwindled off here, and as rig numbers and rig counts have dropped, we're seeing less and less demand for industrial water. Here's a total water demand snapshot. You can see how that industrial demand, when it drops off, the demand needed for total demand drops off as well. So, where did all the money come from? As you can see, here's a snapshot of the loans that are covered with industrial water sales. And you can see the amount of each one and the interest rate that captures all of those. The big thing to look at is the amount of interest and principal that have been paid so far. We're up to nearly over $29 million repaid back to the state in just a little over 4 years. So it's quite a bit of large amount of money that has came back to the state to pay those off. Here's just another snapshot of the loans and how they're paid back and how they came in. You can see some of those D&D gets paid back first. On the bottom, we talked about those additional loans that WAS will be taking this session. Those combination of $20 million in loan will be paid back with domestic funds. Todd talked yesterday that one of the $10 million loans would come through the State Water Commission loan fund. The other $10 million, we're working with BND to secure that to utilize towards the $80 million. Here, as you can just show, that $29 million that we've paid back, how that breaks out, 3.7 in interest to BND, the other interest of 4.8, and then the total principal, $21.5 million. Again, we talk about the running history of monthly sales. You can see when we started January of 2012 through June of 15, and the rig count that goes along with that, and how that really dived off here when we got into the spring of 2015.
Jared, if I may interrupt you again, when the demand drops off, is the price for that water dropping off as well?
Chairman Schmidt, yes, the current price that WAS sells its industrial water set by the Industrial Commission is at 84 cents. Now that we're in a time of abundant supplies and an excess supply of industrial water out there and a decreased demand, you're going to see a lower price, market price for water.
And I'd like to have Representative Zubke address, are you or are you not with WAS dropping your price commensurate with what others are dropping it? So Representative Zubke, if you address that, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a topic that has been discussed at the Industrial Commission at the board level, and a number of times we've had a couple special meetings, in fact, in regard to that. You know, the first thing to understand probably is that WAS is the gold standard when it comes to pricing industrial water in Western North Dakota. That doesn't mean that we're the most expensive nor the cheapest. What it means is that there are very few people that price their industrial water without referring to what WAS prices their industrial water for. We have not changed from the beginning. We were always at 84 cents a barrel. We're still at 84 cents a barrel. That's very public. And the reason we've had some of these discussions is we've had some questions, not only from the Industrial Commission, but also legislators, as far as should we be lowering this price. At this point, I'm not sure that we have enough information to really address that. Keep in mind that location, location, location seems to be taking effect in Western North Dakota. And what has happened is back in 2013 when we moved those industrial sales to the state of North Dakota and created a free market out there, that allowed some major pipeline companies to bring water out of the Missouri and Yellowstone River, and they basically can take those pipelines to where the industrial demand is the greatest. We had made a pledge that we were primarily building this pipeline for domestic use, and so we did not have the luxury of laying pipelines to wherever the highest industrial demand was. So at this point in time, though that location is what's really driving the price, and so if people say to you, well, maybe you should lower your price, you'll sell more water, I guess that's the one issue that we don't know is actually going to happen. If you drop the price 50%, you've got to sell twice as much water to keep your revenue even. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense at this point without having more information to talk about dropping that price, because we may end up just cutting our own revenue if we can't increase sales. I think by the end of 2015, we'll have a better understanding of how much water has been sold. We're trying to get that information to the State Water Commission, but to get that whole picture, we think a lot of that industrial water supply has gone to those pipelines, but we really can't prove that. And so you drop our price, we may not increase our sales, and we'll simply just hurt our own revenue picture. So there are three basic ways where we sell industrial water. The primary is the depots. Second is direct connections, which is where someone like a flatline company will take water through a above ground pipeline to a frack. And then the other one would be long-term pipelines. There's just a few long-term pipelines right now that are getting started in the area. And that might be an area where we would want to consider reducing that price, because it would be a long-term benefit for the state to put water into those long-term pipelines. The direct connections, everybody knows the price. It's very public. The minute we drop our price, everybody else is going to drop their price. It's that simple. I mean, if an independent water provider is putting in a bid on a frack job and they all of a sudden know that WAS is bidding at something other than the 84 cents, they're going to bid accordingly based on that location again. So it's a complex problem, but I think it's one that we just need to let 2015 finish up here, and then we'll take a look at that and see where we're at.
Even real quickly, in 25 words or less, if you drop your price, could you still make your payments?
I don't think we have that in here, but we actually are making our payments. We're current on all our loans. The legislature directed one loan with the Bank of North Dakota, is it?
I'll get to that in here.
You have that in your presentation? Okay, well then I'm just going to defer and let Jarrett kind of walk through that, because he has that in his presentation.
Yeah, please continue, Jarrett. Thank you.
Chairman Schmidt and committee members, if we get to it and it doesn't get answered, BND and Industrial Commission will be coming up after me to talk about all those loans and the prepayments and payments that we have made and future payments that will need to be made. Getting back to that industrial water usage, Representative Zupke talked about, we do have the latest numbers from the Water Commission as far as total water use so far estimated. As you can see, WAS has used about 2,800 acre feet this year. The private industry has used around 14,300 acre feet. I think the easiest way is, this kind of slides tells it all, is we talk about that market share that's been brought up since 2011, revisited in 2013 and 15, of where do we sit and how much of that market share are we taking. Well, here it is, plain and simple. There's no disputing this. This is all North Dakota Water Commission data, so nobody else can contest this information. This is the facts. We're under 20% of the market. As you can see, though, in 2015, we are starting to drop off that market share, closer to 16.5% now through September.
But that would be the market share over the entire WAS distribution system, correct? Is that correct?
Chairman Schmidt, that is actually the state of North Dakota industrial. So it's from Kildare to Dickinson to Bowman to Williston.
Because in some certain areas you may be getting more than this, in some certain areas you may be getting less, would you not?
Chairman Schmidt, that's correct. In McKenzie and Williams area, I can guarantee that we're over 16.5%, but in the Montreal, Bowman, Dunn counties, we're in some cases 0%.
Thank you.
So with that, that kind of wraps up the information that was going to be provided to you. If you have further questions, I'd stand for those.
Senator Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jared, you mentioned
easement fatigue and the difficulty in moving forward, especially when you don't pay for easements just in transmission. I think you, if I recall, you have eminent domain authority. How have you used that, or have you used it in terms of continuing the progress out there with the water lines?
Chairman Schmidt, Senator Lee, yes, we do. WASS has the ability to use eminent domain. We do have a practice and a procedure that we go through. We do hire land consultants to do the mineral research, the surface ownership research. They create the easements, mail them out, and then collect those easements. For those that can't be collected by the land company, we do take those in-house and try to work with the landowners to come up with either a reroute of some kind. In a lot of cases, you know, rerouting doesn't do any good because you're just moving it from one person that didn't want it to another person that didn't want it. In those cases where they're not getting the water, rerouting doesn't work that well. In other cases, if they are getting water, we do try to put a majority of the pipeline on people's land that are getting water. However, there are situations that to utilize the state's money to the full effect and to not hold up projects, we are put in the position where we need to use eminent domain. We have used it, or had to use it, a little more often this summer and spring in order to continue construction. However, those cases were made with several contacts to that landowners, I should say, and tried to work through that process. But in some cases, there's no way to get people water at the other end of the line. There's people that can hold that up. So it's been a struggle. It's not getting any better, I can tell you that. But we are using it in the as minimal as we can in a professional manner that we don't ever threaten with it.
One more question, if I may. In terms of the build-out that you're seeing, are you continuing to add industrial depots and sites for filling, or are you not adding additional sites for industrial use?
Chairman Schmidt, Senator Lee, at this time we haven't, in the last couple of years, haven't added any depots on. We're at 9 water depots right now. There was some plans, and these funds would come through excess industrial funds through the, with approval from the Industrial Commission to build these additional depots. We did look at building one in the Crosby area and in the, between Ray and Tioga. Now, with the market the way it is right now, and the trend going from depots to pipelines, whether it be permanent or lay flat temporary pipelines, we don't think that that's the best way to utilize the state's money. So we're holding off on building any additional depots at this point.
Representative Zimke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to add to that, it should be clear that there are two processes, quick take and eminent domain. Western Area Water Supply Authority has quick take, which allows it to happen a lot faster than eminent domain. And one other item, we have an exhaustive process that we actually follow through before we actually go to that point. We've actually, surprisingly, had a couple landowners that actually encouraged us to use quick take and take the land as opposed to, and that never really happened, and I never did really understand that whole process. So, but there are two separate processes, so you know, quick take and eminent domain.
Was that testimony in lieu of our study for quick take that we got dumped on?
It should pretty well wrap it up.
Wrap it up, okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Jared? Any other questions? If not, thank you very kindly, sir. And Mr. Hardmeyer, the podium is yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Eric Hardmeyer, President and CEO of the Bank of North Dakota. And what we are passing out is a cover memo from Carleen Fine, as well as a worksheet from the Bank of North Dakota. And I'll apologize right up front for the small print, so I hope you all have your cheaters with you. What I'd like to do, I'll just wait a minute until everybody gets their copies. Mr. Chairman, are we ready? Okay. I would like to just take you down. There's four different categories of loans that you can see, starting at the top, the Public Finance Authority, then you have participating members, other debt, then you have other baseline industrial sales. The fourth category is one that I'm going to talk about. That's the state loans that Jerry had talked about earlier. And so you can see the number of loans that are listed there, starting with B&D loan number one, number two, then you have general fund at 5% fixed, three loans from the Resources Trust Fund, and then on the bottom of that you have another loan from the Resources Trust Fund at $19.5 million. Back over on the first column, you can see the rates that the loans are at. The next column is the original amount of the loan. The second is the current balance, and as Jared had talked about, there has been some substantial prepayments. So as you look down at the bottom of that subtotal under the B&B guaranteed loans, you'll see prepayments to date of $10,095,000 the first year, and so far this year there's been $2,183,000. To your point, Mr. Chairman, you asked kind of about the break-even point, and so let me take you down to that. But let me just kind of explain what the rest of that role, what the rest of those roles are. That's just the amortization of those loans as they roll off, and what all the debt requirements are because of those. So as you look down, if you go over to the current balance column, and then you see the current year 2014. Current year 2015 and so forth, if you go down to the bottom and look at the total annual payments, those are the actual payments that have been made. The second line are total annual payments less prepayments. Those were the required. So you can see the difference between $24 million, $14 million. That's the $10 million that I've talked about earlier. That's the prepaid. And so if you follow that down, you'll see what kind of break-even points they need to cash flow all of their loans. And so if you just work with me down to the bottom, you'll see annual break-even sales. They're broken out annually, and then below that are monthly. So if the first year was $18 million, and that depended on how the debt service was laid in, then $26 million. And now you can see, riding out for the rest of till at least 2020, their debt service payments are going to be $27,139,000. Everybody see that? So then you can break that down in terms of what their monthly sales have to be. So their monthly sales to pay all of their loans have to be $2,261,000 going forward. That's, I think, your question, Mr. Chairman. So as was alluded to earlier, all their loans are current. And if you need to talk about sales further, I guess Jared talked about that. That would be kind of the highlights of what I wanted to walk you through, is they are current. This is the balance of their loans. They're in good standing. They're prepaid by $12, $13 million, and that's their break-even point going forward. So with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Any questions? Senator Casper.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hartmeier, how are the, just for my interest here, sort of the loans that are variable, like what's variable, 2%, are those tied to like LIBOR then, or?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they are.
How about the, of my concern of rising interest rates. So the ones that are 5% fixed, where I see the bottom two, it's 0% and 2.5%, are those variable or fixed?
Everything but the B&B loans are fixed.
Okay, so then one that's fixed, were those tied off LIBOR at that time when the loan was?
Those were negotiated, Senator Casper, those were negotiated by Roz and the legislature. So those are legislatively mandated rates. They're written right into the bill when they were authorized.
And what's the term?
And you can see that some of them are 20 years or longer.
Thank you.
Representative Zumke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we're on those two loans, those were two of the very first loans that we took out in 2011, and they do have the 5% fixed rate. The session after that, we separated that domestic water and we turned the industrial water over to the state. So the industrial water is sold by the Industrial Commission, and it's making payments on those loans to the general fund and the resource trust fund. So if you think that through, in a sense, state of North Dakota is charging themselves 5% interest on that debt. And I'm not asking that we do anything because that's in legislation, but it might be something to think about, because we have a lot of people asking about, is there ways we can cut expenses and stuff like that? Well, charging yourself 5% doesn't make a lot of sense when you really think about it. So I'd ask that everybody do some thinking about that. Thank you.
Representative Strelley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eric, as I look at this now, they're barely going to make their payments. I mean, and I don't see anything getting better in 16. I mean, it might get a little better, but this is going to be a pretty tight deal unless we get a rebound in oil prices.
To follow up with that, if I may, Eric, if we look at their gross monthly industrial revenue for the last 4 months, it's substantially lower than that.
Mr. Chairman, that's the way we see it as well. We'll, if need be, we'll sit down with Roz and figure out a plan to go forward.
Thank you. Any other questions? Governor.
Mr. Chairman, just to add to that, I think the fact that they have prepaid principal to the bank is helpful. That gives the bank the authority, in essence, to refinance in some way because they have prepaid on that note. So that's helpful if we're going to be in a dip here. But one other thing I wanted to point out is that when you look at this total loan schedule, WAS owes the state of North Dakota a total of almost $166 million. It's really great that they've been able to pay off $21.5 million. That's terrific. But that is the funds owed. And of that, approximately $75 million is owed to the Resources Trust Fund in four different notes. Currently, no debt service is going back to the Resources Trust Fund, and I think that was because everybody felt that we didn't need it, and instead they should be paying off the Bank of North Dakota. That is obviously a changed situation. The Resources Trust Fund now would really appreciate any money it can get. So a little bit different picture going forward. But WAS has acknowledged publicly that they owe this money to the state of North Dakota. And as they get financially stronger and stronger at the moment, the expectation is that we would one day, perhaps far into the future, but one day be paid back.
Any other comments? If not, Eric, thank you so very kindly.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we'll move into our next item, our 10:55 a.m. item. Presentation by representatives of independent water providers and water usage. And I might add that the IWP presentation to the Water Topics Committee is in legislation, so we are in compliance with that. So, independent water providers, the podium is yours. Please state your name, Steve.
Thank you, Governor Dalrymple, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Mortensen, lifelong resident, farmer rancher of Williston, North Dakota, and chairman of the Independent Water Providers. As we prepared for this meeting, I asked myself, why are we even here? What might we accomplish during the interim that we couldn't during the 2015 session? Well, we want to accomplish three things. Remind you the history of WAS, avoid making things worse for WAS and members and North Dakota and the members of WAS, and to help offer some solutions to help pay back the money the legislature loaned them. Our group was formed during the legislative session of 2011 to protect the rights of private water providers from the Western Area Water Supply, whose mission was to provide treated water for the northwest part of North Dakota that was being affected by the impact of the oil industry. The plan to sell water to the oil industry, pay for it, and build it as fast as they could to sell as much as they could to pay for the project. We objected because the market was mature. Its needs were being met. 80% of the water came from the private sector and the balance from local communities. Competition was vigorous and growing, and we warned that the oil industry would find ways to reduce water needs. The private sector was the first to serve the oil industry. Our members took the risk with their own money to provide a service the industry needed, only later to find out we had a state project wanting to do the same thing. It's been a battle ever since. The IWP never objected to a water project in this part of the state. We could see that it was very much needed with the population growth that was occurring. Nor did our group object to the community selling industrial water and providing income for those communities. It was after the state project was approved and built large industrial depots and direct lateral lines to oil companies that we were very impacted. We would still like for everyone to think, or everyone on the committee, if this happened to your business, if you had a private business and you were spent money to put in infrastructure and offer a service, that if the state come and went ahead and competed with you on that. We're competing against our own tax dollars for the right to do business in North Dakota. I attached a two-page summary of the history of the project. It has grown from the original $150 million project to one now projected at $480 million, and no one seems to blink an eye. Here's a quick overview. 2011 cost $150 million. After the debt was paid, WAS members retained profits less 5% to North Dakota. Intent was to build 12 to 15 water depots. Well, Jared commented they'd build 8 to 9. But if you look at the chart, Mike Hovey percents on their monthly totals, they'll have a connection to 22 locations, including the depots. Not the spider web stepping we've seen in 2013. 2013 cost was $230 million. There was a compromise between 22-33, where North Dakota took responsibility for the $190 million of debt, resolving any default to the locals. North Dakota retained all the debts once the retained all profits once debts were paid and was to be paid to the Resources Trust Fund. The AE2S engineering firm has been paid over $25 million from WAS as of December of 2014. Don't make it worse. Market conditions have changed, which must be recognized by the legislator, State Water Commission, WAS, and its members. Key Energy has failed. American Eagle and Samson had filed bankruptcy. All major producers have cut capital expenditures by 30% or more. Halliburton, Neighbors, and Schlumberger have laid off employees. Target Logistics and other man camps have closed or suffered huge customer losses. Hotels in Williston have 45% vacancy rate. And North Dakota was last in the job growth in the region recently, according to the Prairie Public News Report, November 3, 2015. Some apartment complexes are empty, some have chain link fences around them and not being finished. Rig count, November 4, 2014, 190. Rig count today, November 4, 2015, 69. 64% decrease. 120 rigs at 120 jobs, 14,000 jobs lost. The water market is down about a third from a year ago, and it impacts all water providers, WAS, IWP members, and other private water companies. 2014 State Water Commission showed there were 30,000 acre feet used. 2015, we're at 17,000. It's also time we feel that we should reevaluate the population numbers being used to justify the huge increases And Jared showed them in his study there where the more rigs we lose, or the more rigs that aren't drilling, the less people that are going to be around. And if we have less people around, do we still need to spend $480 million to finish the project? In 2013, there was 2,153 producing wells. 2014, 2,312 producing wells. And in 2015, to this date right now, there's 908 producing wells. Debt was paid over 20 years. The Ross business plan called for a 20-year amortization to bring the most sensible financing option. The Ross business plan relied largely upon industrial sales for debt service. In contrast, the Southwest Water Pipeline, to a recent news report they had, was designed to cash flow with municipal and domestic water sales to its members, and any revenue from the oil industry was a surplus. Southwest Water Pipeline is financially solvent and is not reliant upon the industrial water to service its debts. The continued expansion and increased cost is justified on basis of meeting purported real demand. The asserted demand is soft and should be reconsidered and verified by an independent source with no financial interest in its outcome. Data provided by WAS shows real build-out for many projects that simply will not be built and do not warrant unlimited expansion of this project. Without some reconsideration, for example, WAS shows projects in Epping for 1,000 people, 5,600 people in Springbrook, and other rural subdivisions that are just not happening right now. Size of the project should be reevaluated. What will we do with the massive infrastructure if the pipes are half empty? Who will pay for the higher than necessary maintenance and repairs for the system that is overbuilt? North Dakota taxpayers, WAS residential and commercial customers, the oil industry? So what are some solutions? In a case WAS can't meet its debt service, current law provides, the North Dakota Industrial Commission is uncertain of its ability to meet debt service, then the Bank of North Dakota should consider revising the term dollars. If WAS is in default, the Water Commission to seek appropriations from the legislator. How should we proceed? Should we keep what we're doing? Not look ahead and hope the market returns along with 200 drilling rigs? Let WAS dominate the market, put private businesses out of business, stop all further water permits for the use in North Dakota, but not other parts of the state? None of that makes sense. IWP proposes to begin to collaborate and apply critical thinking to the project and expenditures. Apply value engineering. Critical view of the rural build-out. No more debt. Grant dollars to aid this project. Review sales protections, new population projections, and insist on verification of rural build-out for domestic and rural water systems. Stay the course, capture the reasonable share of the market without running over the private sector, and hopefully the Treasury and General Fund may make up the difference. This meeting today should be the beginning of the IWP and others to work together to collaborate and determine how best to navigate this changing market. That impacts us all. We ask the committee to appoint a subcommittee and begin the collaborating process called for under the law. We think this sets a framework to work together and make more certain that WAS is a success we all want it to be. The IWP hopes the market will return, for we are facing the same drop in market sales as WAS, but only we have lost more due to the state's projects and our own money being invested. We have always known the oil industry to be a roller coaster. It's just we keep forgetting it. We thank the Water Topics Overview Committee for giving this opportunity to present this testimony and listening to our thoughts.
Thank you, Steve. One of the points that you brought out, and I'll get to Representative Striley, is we ask that the committee appoint a subcommittee. And I'm looking at Senator Holmberg as chairman of legislative management with respect to our policy with subcommittees.
They have to be approved, and I don't think I've ever approved one, and I don't think there was one prior to. Very rare.
No, it is. So the idea of appointing a subcommittee is not on the table, sir. I wanted to point that out right away. Okay, Representative Strally.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the rate you charge on average per barrel?
At my water depot, we charge 65 cents a barrel.
Is that, would that be considered the average for
probably
the whole region?
To the average, yes. And it depends on location, like Mr. Tutke stated, that that varies the price so much.
Any other questions? Any other questions, Ms. Dean? Senator Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, have you guys considered yet about going into the potable water business?
Senator Lewick, no, we never want to be in the potable water business, and we never will be in the potable water business. In fact, there is, I believe, a statute that even allows us not to be in it.
Okay, thank you. I just didn't know how your business had, if it had morphed into something different. Thank you.
Nope.
Any further questions? Any further questions? If not, thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Now, I would ask, under the next agenda item, any comments by interested persons? Please state your name, sir.
Chairman Schmidt and Governor Dalrymple, committee members, my name is Mike Ames, and I'm with Ames Water Solutions out of Williston. Appreciate the opportunity to stand before this Water Topics Overview Committee. My life is water. I deal in water every day. Had an opportunity to move to Williston in 1982, kind of fresh out of school. Had a wonderful wife and 2.5 children, and had the clothes on our back, pretty much. Never been around an oil boom before. Moved to Williston in January of 82, saw what was going on. Fortunately, didn't have an opportunity to buy anything because I didn't have anything to buy it with. But when the boom went bust in 85, I was shocked. I just could not believe what happened. Kind of continued in the water business, primarily in the irrigation industry, drilling water wells, laying pipelines, so on and so forth. When this started to happen in 2006, we definitely were in a position to provide water, and we did so. And we actually installed the first industrial water depot out of Lake Sakakawea, south of Newtown. I went to my local bank, and I wanted to borrow $750,000 to put that in, and my banker came unglued. He told me I was nuts. Absolutely do not do that. He actually threatened me. If you do that, you're out of here. You're done. Do not do it. We did it anyway. But it was a challenge. It was a challenge because when this deal started, everyone wanted groundwater. Halliburton told us it's groundwater or no water. You're not going to use surface water. We were shocked later on in 2008 and 2009 when they started using surface water, and they would take a sterilant and sterilize the water to make sure there was no bacteria or anything else like that in it. So, you know, that's when the surface water thing really, really started to take off. We thought maybe we needed to go out and borrow $10 million and put in more depots. So I searched banks high and low, from Bismarck to Billings, and if I mortgaged my wife and our children and everything else we had, they would consider that. I'm not willing to mortgage things that I hold in value, so we chose not to do it. I was a little bit dismayed when the state got in the water business to compete with private industry. I hope it never happens to your industry. I hope the Bank of North Dakota does not go out to the other communities and compete with local banks and personal loans and so on and so forth. It's been very difficult, very challenging. I understand the need, I think more than anyone, about getting good potable water to people.
We have drilled several water wells where we're a little bit embarrassed at the end of the day on how poor the water quality is. And I've always valued rural water systems and getting water out to farmers and ranchers. I feel that's very important. I've always personally questioned how we could build the system and rely upon the oil industry to pay it back. Had no idea that this was going to happen. Had no idea that we would have 75 people working for us in our water business, and now we're down to 20. Had no idea of, you know, the impact that WAS would have on us. It's definitely impacted us. But everybody would like to be in the water business. They're out there. We were made promises that this would have a minimal impact on us in 2011, and that the price of water would be 84 cents, and therefore we could compete with that. One thing to keep in mind is when we sell water at one of our depots for 60 cents or 65 cents, that water has to get trucked to the oil site location, where in the case with WAS, a lot of times they can deliver water to that location for 84 cents. So there is something to keep in mind there. I definitely have been involved in the irrigation business most of my life. We started out with about 50 pivots in northeast Montana and northwest North Dakota, and now there's probably over 1,000 pivots in that time. I've seen 20 irrigation dealers in northwestern North Dakota and northeastern Montana come and go in the 30 years that we've been in business. It's been a challenging business to be in, very demanding, seasonal, hard to make cash flow, hard to make payments in the winter when your water's frozen and we can't get out to the pumps and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's been a challenge. And we've learned to adapt to that. We, more than anything else, want WAS to be successful. We want them to be able to work out whatever agreement they can work out to make this system work. I have no desire to throw any roadblocks in front of them. I just would like the opportunity to compete in a free market enterprise as an entrepreneur and be able to compete on a fair and economical and feasible market and not be disadvantaged. One thing we've done is we have paid huge amounts in taxes. Not only to the federal government, but to the state government. We are big taxpayers. We share with our landowners and royalties, and we've seen the impact and what that has done for them. I would like to address just a little bit about the In Lieu of Irrigation program. That's a program we definitely used. We appreciated the opportunity to use it. I feel there was a real unfair place that happened in the market where we were fenced out of Lake Sakakawea. I think that was one of the biggest tragedies that has happened in the state of North Dakota. Therefore, due to the demand of water, the state felt it was important to get more water out to the market, to lessen the trucks on the road, so on and so forth. Recently, here in October, we've been informed that the In Lieu of Irrigation program is coming to a halt at the end of this year. We feel that's very short notice. We understand they were temporary. Also understand that we have not mined any of our aquifers. We have not drained any of the aquifers in the state of North Dakota. We're very careful about that. We're very concerned. We know that's our future. But we feel the short notice is unacceptable. We feel it would have been in the best interest of the state to allow us more time to get those done. Most of the In Lieu of Irrigation permits that we have filed for conditional industrial water permits, knowing that that water is available there, but in a few we've received them, but several of them we have not received those conditional industrial permits, and it's going to create quite a hardship on us. That is all I have to say. I would gladly entertain any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Ames? Any questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Ames. Entertain any other comments from the public? Any other comments?
Yes, sir.
Have at it.
Mr. Chairman, Governor Dalrymple, my name is Jeff Frith. I'm the manager of the Devil's Lake Basin Drinking Water Resource Board, and here to direct the ask the legislative branch, the executive branch, to assist the Game and Fish Department to stop and help prevent the spread of zebra mussels. I think they're an absolutely devastating aquatic nuisance species that our state is right on the border of, and I don't know if we can afford to allow them any further than what there are currently. I think we're going to see a lot of problems in the Red River. I'm not sure exactly what the problems will be as they continue to move inward and westward, but I don't imagine they would be very good for the fishery or the recreation aspects of any of our lakes, rivers, or streams that we have in North Dakota. And just here to ask for your support in helping prevent that spread.
I thank you kindly. Any comments? Any comments?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any further public comments? Any further public comments? If not, I look to the governor for his thoughts as we end.
Mr. Chairman, been a great meeting, and we appreciate very much being included. I've learned a lot, and it makes me feel like I'm a legislator again. It's great.
Senator Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question maybe to Todd or John Patch about that those temporary permits. I was looking back in the minutes from August, and I know it was discussed then, but my understanding was that it may go on a little bit longer than what I think Mr. Ames mentioned in terms of its termination. If they could just respond to that in terms of the timing, if that got moved up for a particular reason or what that might, what reason might be.
Mr. Sando, come forth.
John, too.
Okay.
Hey, maybe I'll just lead off. The program, we aren't, there's parts of the aquifers, we're looking at 8 aquifers, and 6 of them, 2 of them will continue to allow the use in the aquifer in 2016, so that will go on until September 15 of 2016, and the other 6 aquifers will be curtailing at the end of the year, so John can get into some of the details and how we've addressed the issues, and it's a year-to-year process, so the letter went out, you know, like October 17th, so it's still 2.5 months before the end of their current temporary permit, so.
You know, Todd, if I may ask you one question before you turn to John, is there anything in the permit that says when you deny the permit, you have to give them a certain amount of time? Does it say you have to give them 30 days? Do you have to give them 60 days? Can you do it the day before the end of the year? Is there any indication that says you have to give them a certain amount of time before that permit ends?
Okay. Why don't you answer that?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, my name is John Patch. I'm the Director of the Water Appropriation Division for the State Water Commission Office of the State Engineer. In answer to your question, we weren't denying any permits. These were a suspension of an irrigation permit, a voluntary suspension, and then we issued a temporary water permit, and so those were a term-based permit that cannot last longer than 1 year, and so it, essentially that permit will just expire, and it's not that we're not denying anything, we're just the policy is now that we're not going to allow the suspension of an irrigation permit and the reissuance or the issuance of a temporary industrial permit.
But there's nothing in that permit that says you have to give them a certain amount of leeway when you do that. And I apologize to Senator Lee for overriding his question.
No, there's nothing in a temporary permit that says we would have to give any time if it was going to be denied or canceled. But really, in this case, we're not doing either of those.
Please address Senator Lee's.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was looking back again, and it just seemed like there was a longer period of time that you were looking at. Is there something that moved that time period forward, or am I mistaken as I look at what was discussed in August?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lee, The program was started back in about, well, it was started in late 2010 and in earnest in 2011, allowing this, the policy was done under our emergency authority that we have in state law.
I understand, John.
So it was done on a, with the knowledge that it was going to be evaluated on an annual basis, and that, you know, we would go, you know, 1 year at a time and you know, consider the circumstances out there that under which the authority was that we had, which was the emergency authority, whether those emergency conditions continued or not. And we have felt now with the downturn and with the expansion of the infrastructure that those emergency conditions do not exist any longer. And so the program then was ended. Oh, there was a transitional period to allow some where there aren't, where the industrial supplies are sparse, to continue through the end of the next irrigation season, September 15th.
Representative Strelley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I agree with getting rid of these permits. I do think it's too sudden, though. I mean, this is going to affect the oil industry. It's really that simple. I think pushing it out maybe into the spring would have made a heck of a lot more sense than just giving them, 90 days or whatever it is. And the oil industry there will be an impact on the oil industry. There's no question about it. Their costs will go up when the market is really bad right now.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, gentlemen. Is there any other committee discussion? If not, I just got a couple of points that happened over the last day that I'd like to put forth, please. It seems, though, that when we have to continue to explain what our intent is, and every time we explain it, sometimes it changes. And I recognize that the role of government changes with every bill. However, when we have to continually explain our intent, we didn't write it right. We have to do better. And I think based on the discussions we had yesterday, when you have the hammer, everything looks like a nail. And when you have the hammer, the fix to what we discussed yesterday lies with us in the budget section and nobody else but us. And I think we better get it together. We better take what we heard yesterday. And we need to improve what we write. We need to improve our involvement. We need to improve our communications. And we need to resolve and define what it is we want to be done. And I think we have to do it better. And we found out yesterday, as one of my close colleagues said, we raised the bar, we lowered the bar, we took the bar away. We need to be consistent. We cannot expect the Office of State Engineer and the State Water Commission to continually interpret what it is we want. We have to give flexibility, but yet we also have to give direction, and we better find where that is. And when it's all said and done, there's usually more said than done, but we cannot take that philosophy. We've got to get it done, and it's got to be with us. It's got to start with us. So with that, my apologies for being a little bit longer in the agenda, but I think it was well worth our time. I thank the audience for participating with us through that. And most of all, I thank what you do in their safe journeys. And we are looking at meeting probably the third week in January. Again, thank you very kindly.
Thank you.